the members. I've seen some of the members since the year started, so thank you very much for your attendance. Members, just maybe in terms of today's program and maybe the program for the week and next week. As you have seen, the program has been circulated. In terms of today, we will have the briefing, the update on the progress with the implementation of the anti-gang strategy by the South African Police Service. We will also have input from civil society organizations. Then the second item, honorable members, we received on Friday a referral from the speaker with regard to a request by the honorable Minister of Police with regard to the extension or not of the contract of the executive director of IPED. Of course, the matter is in the court. The matter is in court today, but I presume there would be a draft order that will have implications on our program for the rest of the week and next week, but I'll speak to that when we go to the second item. Tomorrow, of course, members, we will have an update on the progress with the activities of the Metropolitan Police and also a briefing from the South African Police Service in terms of their interaction and cooperation. And then there's a possibility, and I'll speak to that later, a possible very short meeting on Thursday just to adopt a program in terms of the referral that's been made by the speaker. So, honourable members, that is our program for this week, and thank you very much for coming. I'm going to give now opportunity to the honourable members to introduce themselves, then I will go to General Sithole, and then we'll go to the civil society organisations just to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. A.M. Sheikh Imam, member of this committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. I'm Zakhele Mbele, committee member.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Phindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Leonard Ramatlakane, a member of this committee.
Good morning. I'm Jerome Marke, a member of this committee.
Thank you very much, members. We've got two apologies, Honourable Mabidja and Honourable Mulabatsi. Then we will go to the National Commissioner, General Sithole.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and good morning to Honourable members and as well as civil society. Chair, our delegation is as follows. They will make an indication as I call their names. We've got Lieutenant General Waima Tagata from DPCI. We've got Lieutenant General S. Simfa, the Deputy National Commissioner Management Advisory Services. We've got Lieutenant General L.J. Dumane, Deputy National Commissioner Crime Detection. We've got Lieutenant General T.C. Musikiri, Divisional Commissioner Detective Service. We've got Lieutenant General P.A. Jacobs, Divisional Commissioner Crime Intelligence. We've got Lieutenant General K.E. Julia, Provincial Commissioner Western Cape. We've got Major General Patekile, Deputy Provincial Commissioner Eastern Cape. We've got Lieutenant General M.D. Sembe, Provincial Commissioner Free State. Lieutenant General we've got Major General Ndlovu from Gauteng Province. We've got Major General DJ Chiliza, Deputy Provincial Commissioner KZN, as well as Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi, PC KZN. We've got Major General A.E. Lincoln, Head Anti-Gang Task Team, Western Cape. We've got Major General L. Rabi, Head Strategic Management and National. We have Brigadier N. Zima, Acting Head Organizational Development National. Brigadier V. Naidu, Spokesperson for the National Commissioner, Colonel K.B. Stain, Parliamentary Liaison Officers. There could be other members coming through, Chair. Thank you very much.
Also, a word of welcome to the Honourable Minister of Police, Honourable Becky Kwele. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate your attendance. Then we will give to civil society organizations just to indicate their presence. We will start with Mr. Eilenrich. You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair. Tony Kusato.
Good morning, everybody. John Clutter from the United Public Safety Front.
Good morning, my good Mr. Spring, United Teresa Tons Association.
Good morning, Tatas Kusana from Purple.
Good morning, everyone. Lucinda Evans from Pilisa Abafazi Beto. Morning, it's Latifa Jacobs from Palisa Bafase.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Avril Andrews from AAA, Mom School for Justice.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for the privilege. Zaida Samuels, Rene Roman Search and Rescue Team, Lavender Hill.
Thank you very much. Is there any other civil society organizations? Yes, you're welcome, sir. Good New Year. Anybody else? Yes.
My name is
Right, thank you very much. If other you know, members of civil society join us while we're busy, they're welcome to indicate. Honourable members, must maybe just to give a context to today's hearing, it's not the first time that we're looking at SAP strategy with relation to gangs. There's been, during this term in 2015, we received a presentation at that time from General Geary and Western Cape. Then in 2016, September, we also received a presentation from SAPS on policing of gangsterism. And then on August 23, 2017, there was also a presentation on the anti-gang strategy, Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape. And then in December, during our oversight visit to the Eastern Cape, we received an excellent, I must say, briefing from the Eastern Cape Police on their strategy in the Nelson Mandela Metro. Brilliant. That report we will hopefully deal with in the next week or two. Then we had also the march to Parliament last year, where community groups handed over a petition to the Speaker that was referred to us, and we said, let's, at the beginning of the year, look at all the issues. I think the committee also recognized the fact that the anti-gang strategy and the rollout of the anti-gang units is underway. That is a positive development. It's in line with the recommendations of the National Development Plan. So today is really to get an update from the South African Police Service and also get feedback from communities. But what is critical to understand, again, is that the criminal justice system and the police is only one pillar of any anti-gang strategy. Human development, social partnerships and spatial design doesn't fall under the jurisdiction of the South African Police Service. So it's also other role players who are not here today from the Police Portfolio Committee. Our focus and our jurisdiction is the South African Police Service. So we focus on that. A lot of the issues regarding anti-gang strategy is really local government, provincial government, and other national departments, and of course civil society. Of course, the issue of coordination will come in very much to the fore, but and of course the community leaders can raise any issue. But our brief is to get a view, is the South African Police Service making progress? What are the challenges from a law and order perspective? Is there cooperation or not? The broader debate, the broader discussion, of course, that is a debate for another day. So thank you very much for that. We will then immediately give an opportunity then to the South African Police Service, but Minister, anything from your side at this stage?
No, thanks, Chairperson. Definitely, I'll request the police to proceed with so that we don't preempt the matters, especially on the points you have just made. That anti-gang unit is not a silver bullet of dealing with all the matters. Maybe in the discussion that will come, the police must do as much as they can, but thus far, because one major problem of policing is environmental design. Environmental design is one major, and the social issues around that, for instance, schooling will be a big part of it, and other matters. So we'll put all what we can do. I'm sure the discussion will help us taking matters forward, including the big role of the communities as they are, as they are here. Maybe let's see what is there, and with a full understanding that we'll do the best, but thus far, and hear what we have done, what we plan to do going forward on this one. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister, for your input. Over to you and your team. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, the Honourable Minister, Honourable Members, Civil Society. Chair, just a brief outline. The anti-gang units, it's a national approach. So it's a nationally designed approach. It's executed in the provinces according to the geographical approach. That's the challenge present itself. Further to that, it is following a stabilization and normalization approach. The first stabilization towards gangs started with Operation Thunder, which was executed in the Western Cape. And that stabilization operation is still in place. And the approach is intended to cover all nine provinces in two-tier approaches. One, we've got those provinces that are belonging to the combat zone, and those are the first three provinces that requires combating, not necessarily prevention. The other six provinces, they require prevention, because where gangsterism has not yet fully manifested itself, we adopt that is the prevention approach. Then, in those areas where the gang task teams are operational, we also start normalization. Normalization talks to community mobilization. And community mobilization currently is following a three-tier approach. The community policing strategy has been pronounced by the president in the SONA and is in execution. Youth crime prevention is one of those, spiritual crime prevention as well as the traditional policing that is approached. We have also initiated through the fusion center concept an analysis, an in-depth analysis approach, which is continuing. This analysis can be escalated to research, and it can also be shared with other civil society organizations. With your permission, Chair, the actual presentation shall be led by Major General Leon Rabi. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, National Commissioner. It's not all you can do. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Minister, members of the committee, and civil society, thank you for the opportunity to brief the committee on the progress that the South African Police Service has got made with the implementation of the anti-gang strategy. Honourable Chair, we submitted two presentations to the committee last week. We submitted the first one, and then this morning we submitted a supplementary presentation, and we agreed that I may then use the supplementary presentation for the purpose of briefing the committee, and then I will refer to the original presentation that we submitted for the purpose of the statistics that we would like to quote. Honourable Chair, as far as the strategy is concerned, without repeating what was previously presented to the committee, it is aimed at establishing a dedicated and adequately resourced policing capability within the South African Police Service to combat gangsterism, involving the stakeholders through a collaborative and consultative approach to policing. Now, the strategy identifies four key pillars that we need to address when we address the matter of gangsterism. That includes human development, criminal justice processes, environmental design, and social partnerships. Now, what we will do is, as we go along with the presentation, we will also indicate, as far as these pillars are concerned, what progress we've made and what has been implemented. The presentation will also focus on internal functioning, on the capabilities that the South African Police Service need to establish within these entities to effectively combat gangsterism, and that is going to include prevention, intelligence, the combating capability, detection, communication, And as I indicated, we will then further unpack this in later slides in the presentation. I would say the short-term, short to medium-term approach, implementation approach that the South African Police Service has followed, the National Commission indicated that as far as the short-term is concerned, focusing specifically on 2018-2019, first of all, there was an establishment of an anti-gang unit or capability within the Western Cape. As far as other two provinces are concerned, Gauteng and Eastern Cape, the approach was to establish an anti-gang task team in those respective provinces with the aim to immediately allocate resources and implement the quick win action plan that the South African Police Service has developed that's focusing specifically on gangsterism. The intention is, as NASCOM already indicated, that over the medium term to establish this capability in all the nine provinces, that is now in 2018 to 2021. And that includes capabilities in Western Cape, Gauteng, Eastern Cape, all nine provinces, as I mentioned, with specific focus on three provinces, Western Cape, Gauteng, and Eastern Cape, where we have a fully-fledged combating capability, and they are also included in the stabilization and normalization approach that the South African Police Service implemented. And then from a preventative perspective, focusing on other provinces like including KwaZulu-Natal, Free State, Northwest, and Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and the Northern Cape. The National Commissioner has commissioned a work study investigation, and the purpose of the work study investigation is to determine your organizational and functional requirements, your post-establishment, your resource requirements for all the entities in all nine provinces. The work study investigation is approximately 80% completed at the moment, and it's envisaged that it will be implemented soon. If we look at the specific areas that we're focusing on now, the current provincial capabilities, as I highlighted, the ones that has where it's been implemented, including Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and Gauteng, just to briefly touch on which specific areas it includes. The Eastern Cape includes Geldendale, Bethalsdorp, Balgoa Park, and Imansdorp. In Gauteng, the focus is on Eldorado Park, Reiger Park, and Westbury. There's quite a significant number of stations that are included, 16 in total in the Western Cape, so I'm not going to read through all of them. I think the committee has been briefed in more detail as far as they are concerned. Now, these specific areas has been identified, and the provinces has been identified based on a proper analysis of gang-related incidents and the identification of hotspots in their respective provinces. As far as the gang narrative is concerned, and what the South African Police Service had to consider at the time of implementing the strategy is, first of all, if we look at how the gangs function, they are self-sustaining and multi-dimensional criminal enterprises that are difficult to police through the normal conventional policing methods. That means that the South African Police Service had to relook the way that we police them and ensure that we implement an appropriate policing method. So first of all, there was a need to establish a dedicated specialized units in these provinces to deal with the phenomena, specifically now starting the project, identifying the three provinces where specific hotspots have been identified. Now, anti-gang units, as I highlighted, have been established in these provinces to respond to the identified threat. Just to recap again, the Western Cape is functioning as a fully-fledged unit, while the other two are still task teams that we are in a process of capacitating. It was also necessary to allocate specialized competencies to these units. Now, the intention is not, due to the crime threat that we were facing, the intention was not to establish a capability with members that are not properly trained and developed to deal with the crime threat. So we have allocated specialized competencies properly, members that are properly trained from the National Intervention Unit, from our TRTs, our specialized investigators, and our intelligence operatives have been allocated to these gang units. They've also initiated the development of a training curriculum that specifically deal with the phenomena of gangsterism to respond to the threat and the modus operandi that we will continuously analyze as we go along policing the gangsterism. As far as operational successes are concerned, Honorable Chair, I will use the other presentation just to touch on some of the successes as far as that is concerned. If you look at the functioning of the of gangs, there is a clear hierarchy and a value chain that applies. And if you look at the value chain that is applicable, there are certain activities performed at certain levels or associated with that specific levels. At the lower level, we have the activities or inter-gang violence that primarily takes place on street level. And most of gang violence and turf war takes place at this level. And that is where you will find your drug runners, your shootings, your robberies effect. And these are the things that are affecting your communities the most. The second level is our local gang leaders, leadership that figure in different areas. And they primarily focus on controlling your drugs, your liquor outlets, and other criminal activities. And they also are in charge of leading the gangs in these areas. The third level, on top of that, we have prominent leadership figures, and they are considered to be sponsors of inter-gang violence at street level, and they do represent the social and economic power that is associated with gangsterism. Then we have our inter-provincial tier, where we're looking at high flyers seeking to expand their businesses across provincial boundaries with regard to firearms, drugs, your hitmen, your club security businesses with specific reference to Gauteng. And also we would like to highlight your hitmen from Western Cape gangs that are being hired by gangs in the West, specifically in the Westbury environment. At the highest level, then we have our transnational activities where gangs engage and are linked to transnational organized crime and groups and syndicates. And these specific activities are the most pertinent threat to national security of the country. Touching on the root causes contributing to the problem and also associated with the modus operandi that is being applied by gangsterism, we have your social or community factors that needs to be taken into consideration. You have economic factors that contributes to the problems. You also have psychological individual relation factors. We have historical factors based on how long they exist and how long this has been a problem in specific areas. You have to consider, or what is also influencing is the criminal factors that are relevant to specific areas, and then also the roles that are being played by other government entities, or in some instances the total lack thereof. When we're looking at the specific types of crimes, Honorable Chair, that we've identified that plays a role in gang activities, and these type of crimes are clear when you look at the specific competition that plays a role within the gang environments, where these gangs are actually competing with each other for certain commodities in certain territory. The crimes that has been identified that we are specifically focusing on from the perspective of the established capabilities includes your drugs or narcotics, your trafficking in people, illegal dealing in precious metals, your marine resources, your transport business or taxis, your security and in the entertainment industry, who illicit cigarettes, prostitution, firearms, and corruption. Now, in terms of each one of these crimes, there are specific dynamics associated with that, and there are specific modus operandi that are being applied that the South African Police Service needs to be aware of and constantly analyze to have a full understanding of the threat associated with gangsterism. Now, contributing to that, if you take into consideration what we said about the competition that is evident within the gang's environment, you also have your factors internally, like the succession of leadership, your sporadic fights internally, or that it's due to external factors, as well as retaliation or revenge that contributes to the sporadic incidents that we notice in terms of gang incidents. Now, as far as the envisaged capability is concerned, Honorable Chair, we've made reference to the fact that the intention is to ultimately establish capabilities within 9 of the provinces. Now, if we look at an overall capability itself, there needs to be an operational capability. We need to have an operational support capability, and then a generic support capability that will enable us to function or to manage these entities properly. From an operational perspective, the capabilities that we're going to establish talks to visible policing or the crime prevention leg that most of you are familiar with. It includes a medium and high risk response capability, that's your National Intervention Unit, your TRTs. an investigation capability to investigate your incidents that has been reported, your tracking teams that can be utilized for the purpose of tracing and tracking your wanted persons. In from an operational support perspective, we're making specific reference to your intelligence gathering and analysis capability to have a proper and updated understanding of the crime threat associated with gangsterism, as well as the modus operandi that are being applied within that context. Also, we'll have an operational room where all your operational activities will be coordinated on a 24/7 basis. Management information centers within that capability to continuously analyze information that relates to the activities of the unit. From a support perspective, it's your normal administration and data capturing capability. So in essence, it's a fully fledged capability. It's not just a single, it is not including only a single capability, as we indicated earlier. For the South African Police Service to effectively respond to this, you need to have a multidisciplinary approach, and we need to make provision to respond to all types of incidents that are characterized by the incidents that takes place within the anti-gang, within the gang environment. Now, the successes, the ESPN successes, I'm going to touch on them in more detail as far as firearms and ammunition is concerned. Ultimately, the aim is to ensure that as far as the availability of drugs is concerned, that we disrupt the supply. There's also, if you look at murder, it's evident that in the areas we've implemented, with specific reference to the Western Cape, that the incidence of murder in the specific areas, it is declining, although December 2018 was a problem we normally experience when we look at the fluctuation of crime levels, that going into the festive season, you have a high level or high number of murders that are being reported. There's also been success in terms of the arrest that has been made. That includes 5 hitmen that were arrested that was linked to specific cases that are being investigated. And we're also currently looking at the matter of witness protection to ensure that proper witness protection is provided, taking into consideration that other stakeholders within the JCPS cluster need to attend to. Now, if we look at the preliminary impact, just to highlight some of the successes, we will go into some more detail. In the areas, for instance, as part of the strategy to address gangsterism, we're also implementing a school safety strategy. Now, the intention is to create a safe environment for children where, you know, they can go to school, walk in the streets, and play in the parks. Now, the majority of the schools within the areas that the South African Police Service have targeted through the gangsterism or the anti-gang units are currently functional and children are attending to school, but we are not without problems. There are still certain areas that are problematic, and the South African Police Service is currently looking into the matter and also cooperating with other government departments to ensure that we formalize the relationships with them to address the areas that are still problematic. The implementation pillars, if I can go into some of the detail, as I highlighted, Honorable Chair, the focus is on human development, social partnerships, environmental design, and the criminal justice process. And I would like to highlight some of the successes, specifically focusing on the Western Cape. Now, first of all, starting with human development. Now, a total of 1,536 schools have been linked to the school safety committees. The school safety committee consists of the Department of Education representatives where they are required, principals and school management, our school governing bodies, and SAPS, and they meet on a monthly basis. We also have initiated awareness campaigns at the specific schools by our social crime prevention capability and the anti-gang unit. And they are specifically focusing on problematic school to make the children aware of, you know, what exactly gangsterism is, what is associated with that, as well as the consequences associated with that. The mobilization of communities through the community police forums, that has been a concerted effort that has been implemented by the South African Police Service in this specific area to ensure that we have fully functional community police forums, neighborhood watches, and other community-based organizations to utilize them as stakeholders in addressing the matter. The conventional policing methods through a targeted and geographical approach based on the intelligence received to ensure that we target specific areas that proves to be problematic in terms of incidents of crime to ensure that we deploy our resources accordingly. Our specialized capability, including now the anti-gang unit that includes your medium and high-risk forces to ensure that we have an immediate response where incidents take place, and then where incidents did take place, that we have a capability to effectively investigate that. Customer is King project is aimed at enhancing frontline service delivery to communities that has been prioritized, that has also been implemented in this specific areas in the Western Cape. As far as the social partnerships are concerned, the community police strategy launched on the 20 October 2018. That was introduced all with the introduction of the community in blue concept. The traditional policing concept that was launched on 7 December 2018. We are currently drafting a safer city model, in consultation with the necessary stakeholders to address the matter. That also including the launch of this youth crime prevention strategy, as well as the spiritual crime prevention strategy through the mobilization and interaction with our religious community, but the National Commission already referred to that. Also focusing on environmental design, there are a couple of issues that have been identified that impacts on our ability to address gangsterism effectively. That is with specific reference to lack of your basic infrastructure, poor lighting, lack of accessibility in terms of roads and access to specific communities, then also problematic is your spatial development. And in some instances, you also have to take into consideration the design and layout of residential areas. Now, that links to the problems that we previously referred to, that due to the way that these settlements develop, you have a problem with the fact that you do not have proper access and infrastructure. Now, we in the Western Cape, they've already engaged with the provincial government to see what matters or what can be implemented. As you indicated, Honourable Chair, this is not in the responsibility of the South African Police Service alone, and it's critical that we get all the relevant stakeholders on par. And this was also highlighted to the stakeholders at the Western Cape Safe Conference that recently took place. Now, with reference to the criminal justice process, we currently have your formalized partnership between your police stations, your anti-gang unit, and your community police forums, your safety forums. They are focusing on addressing gang-related crime in these prioritized areas. They've also looked at the process of collecting information for the purpose of analysis and directing operational forces. That has currently been well established and is being facilitated by the crime intelligence capability. We also developed an early warning mechanism to provide timely alerts to operational forces with regard to activities that may influence the safety and security situation within precincts. So the dissemination of early warnings is provided to relevant operational forces for deployment to hotspots, and that is currently being managed by the operational room that I referred to earlier. The current working arrangement with the public prosecutor involves guidance and consultation on an ongoing basis to consider for the purpose of taking that into consideration in the investigation of reported incidents. And there's also a formal MOU and the possibility of specialized gang courts and dedicated prosecutors that is currently being explored for the purpose of including it in the strategy going forward. Honourable Chair, I would just then like to jump to the other presentation just to highlight some of the successes that has been achieved so far. Starting from slide 6, if we look at the number of registered operations that are currently being monitored through the National Gang Desk, Honourable Chair, you will note that we listed 6 provinces there and not only limited to the 3 that I referred to in the previous presentation, because in the other provinces that are listed here, we've also initiated the establishment of such capability. Now, there's a total of 76 operations that are currently being monitored, 9 in Gauteng, 1 in Free State, 20 in Western Cape, 20 in Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal 23, and Northwest 3. As far as gangs, suspects, syndicate group and ringleaders who were identified and profiled for POCA and OCTA investigations, there's a total of 66, and that is 20 in the Western Cape, 13 in the Eastern Cape, Gauteng, 10 Free State, 10 KwaZulu-Natal, 10 and the Northwest 3. If you look at the number of investigation and inquiries that we are currently dealing with in the Eastern Cape, the number of dockets that the capability is dealing with totals to 1,094, and 400 is to court, and under investigation is a total of 694 dockets and 33 inquiries. In the Free State, there's a total of 56 dockets that are being investigated by the capability, 24 that's gone to court and 32 currently under investigation. Gauteng, 267 cases, 235 in the court process, and 32 under investigation. KZN, 46 dockets, 52 in the court system and 21 currently under investigation, and the Western Cape a total of 889 with 448 in the court system and 441 under investigation. Now that gives you a total of 2,352 dockets that are currently being dealt with by the capability in the respective provinces, of which 1,132 is currently in the court system and 1,188 currently under investigation. As far as projects and successes are concerned with the, as far as the OCTA process is concerned, that has been operationalized in the respective province through the provincial organized crime secretariats in the Free State, KZN, Gauteng, Eastern Cape and the Western Cape. If we look at the identified gangs or groupings in the Western Cape, we have a total of 20. Associated with that is 30 registered projects, 221 arrests have been made, 77 firearms have been confiscated, and 4 vehicles have been confiscated. In the Eastern Cape, they are currently focusing on 10 identified gangs with 20 registered projects. They've arrested 36 suspects, confiscated 19 firearms, and 2 vehicles. In Gauteng, there's 10 identified gangs, groups, 13 inquiries addressing identified correctional facilities has been registered in terms of the projects, 9 arrests have been made, 4 firearms confiscated and 5 vehicles, KZN 10 identified groups, 28 registered projects, 29 arrests, 4 confiscation of firearms and 2 vehicles. And the Free State, there's 10 identified gangs, 1 project running, and so far 39 arrests have been made. So in total, since the establishment, we're looking at a total of 60 gangs or groupings that has been targeted within the respective provinces, a total of 79 projects running, 334 arrests has been made, 104 firearms have been confiscated, as well as 13 vehicles. In conclusion, we're also collaborating on the school safety monitoring evaluation that I've already indicated. We've also implemented junior commissioner program in cooperation with the station and provincial management, specifically identifying youth at risk and promoting early intervention against a culture of gangsterism. And that has also been implemented in the selected all the provinces that has been listed. The SAFS is playing a supporting role to the community safety forums. Honourable Chair, I've already highlighted some of these without going to repeat them. I think I can maybe just refer lastly to that from 13 to 16 November, a total of 70 members were inducted with training on gangsterism in the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, Northwest and the Free State. And there are certain activities that are currently in progress. That is your training module that I've already referred to, the Workstar investigation that is running. There's continuous allocation of physical resources that includes the allocation of vehicles, selecting, vetting, and training of personnel. And I think that basically concludes the presentation and the progress that we want to report. That's all. Thank you, sir.
General Rabi, anything to add, General Sitole?
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Chair. Just the resources invested in the anti-gang unit, Operation Thunder at 10 million has been allocated for this operation. It was the first 5 million, then the second 5 million that goes with the extension. 150 members deployed from outside Western Cape into Western Cape, and 23 vehicles. Then the anti-gang unit, 10 million allocated, 193 members, 89 vehicles. Then the review of the personnel plan of the South African Police Service to complement the anti-gang unit or the strategy. I think 3,700 has been released in December from the college, newly graduated. They've been distributed, that is across. The recruitment has now been reviewed to take 5,000 per year from 3,000 to complement the personnel plan shortages and also try to grow towards, that is the ratio, and the migration of resources from the strategic framework of the organization to the local policing framework also include resources which would be redirected for gang combating and prevention purposes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, General Sitore. That's SAP's contribution. Let's go to civil society. Mr. Heinrich, you're welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I will be speaking on behalf of KUSATU. So, comrades and friends, essentially our submission goes to what the lived experiences are of our people. And it's for this reason that our presentation today is complemented by the submission that we've made to NEDLAC in terms of Section 77 of the Labor Relations Act, where we hope to institutionalize the kind of partnership that we hear government talking about between the police agencies and civil society organization more generally, including the value add that the unions can bring to it. So, Chair, our concern is essentially born out of the fact that there's no doubt that there are growing levels of criminality and killings across our nation. And this is nearly part of us ushering in democracy. So many criminals took the opportunity to come into our country, and some of the criminals are using our constitution and other legislative protections to look after our society, to defend their own interest in the carrying out of the kind of deeds that they do. So we just want to state that the lived experiences of our people is a real concern, and we need to find a way to respond to these urgently. There's been a lot of challenges.
Is there any electronic version that we can put on the board?
Sorry, Chair, we've made copies and we've circulated that to the Secretary, but we've had some computer problems this morning, but we have given the hard copies out, and it's at the front for the Secretary.
Thank you. Can proceed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So, Chair, we are just asked that the matters that are being dealt with within the police services, the way in which it unfolds and the perceptions in the public eye is that there's an agency that doesn't appear to have coherence. Our members of the public can't always be privy to these kind of discussions where they can get a sense of the good work that is done, being done by SAPS, by government, and coordination taking place. And they can only relate to it to what they see at the public level and what they experience at the media in relation to the one institution that is charged with defending them, and that is SAPS and the other associated policing agencies. The points that are made about the socioeconomic challenges in our country, we entirely agree with that, and we think that we have to respond to that, as well as addressing the legacy of a brutalized society that has a consequence of apartheid, and that we see the moral decay of our society taking place more and more for a range of those reasons. And so we accept that there can't only be a policing solution. There's got to be a solution across society that deals with all of those issues. And, Chair, when we come to Parliament, we hope that our government will tell us what it is that they're doing across the different areas to bring greater synergy and to make sure that the coordinated efforts that the government brings to bear from the different agencies deals with the challenges to the same extent that the members experience it in the communities. Having again listened to the presentation on the anti-gang strategy, we welcome the urgency and the focus of the presentation, and we share the objectives and hope that it can be realized urgently. There's some areas that we'd want to raise that we think in addition we'd want to find out how the government and the ministry is focusing on that. And we hope that out of that we can get a sense of what the level of better coordination is between the different departments and specifically what the role is that communities can play in complementing what government's doing in respect of this. We've seen a change over the last few years especially, and we want to use this opportunity to commend the appointment of Minister Sele, who certainly brought a lot more enthusiasm and action to the department. We appreciate the work that are done by SAPS's members, and we see the changes and we've seen the effects of that, the arrest and imprisonment of many of the gang units, the establishment of many of the gang the gangs that manifest themselves in the Western Cape, the launch of the gang unit, the way in which poker's used to deal with that, and then the interventions in many of the more fragile communities where gangs have started to take over those communities in a real way. For us, it's the question of the manifestation of this criminality in our communities, because as outlined on the various areas in which gangs represent themselves, from the most senior to the local levels, the working class communities' experience of gangs is really the shooting that's taking place and the violence in the communities, and then, of course, the drugs that are tearing apart our communities and stealing the futures of our children. So that must be an issue that must be nearly responded to primarily. The other issues of criminality in our society is a real concern, and we appreciate that there's a linkage between the corruption that happens at Steinhoff, some of the corrupt activities that have taken place in government, and what happens at the street gang level. So criminal activity, to an extent, you think, is always going to be there, no matter what the best endeavors of the police agencies and the government agencies responsible are. We appreciate the initiatives that are taken. By the lived experiences of our people is that we're not really bringing down the level of threat to their daily livelihoods, and that's really where we'd like to make the focus of our presentation, without giving the impression that we're not appreciating the other areas of the value chain in respect of criminality and gangs. Chair, 25 years later, we stand here today and we know that the political emancipation of our country has not addressed the economic exclusions that so many of our people feel. We've seen unemployment levels rising. There's deepening levels of poverty in many sections of our community. In spite of the fact that we've built more than 3 million houses across the length and breadth of our country, 17 million people have state grants. We now have a basic minimum wage that addresses many of the challenges of workers. But in spite of all of that, we see that we have growing levels of inequality across our society. And that's leading to a loss of hope within our communities, especially amongst young people. And that difficulties, especially the question of the huge levels of inequality, shows the unique circumstance in South Africa. So where other countries may have poverty levels, they don't have the huge levels of inequality. So you don't get that fragmentation in the society, and you don't get that deepening level of resentment between the sections of the richer community and the sections of the poorer community. And so that must be a matter that we respond to effectively. The social fragmentation in families and in communities as a consequence of that socioeconomic conditions, and we appreciate the points that have been made to respond to that and appreciate that other departments will deal with that. But the reality of gangsters is that they're taking the space to deal with many of the social injury manifestations that exist in our communities. And so the gangsters are becoming the role models. The youngsters are seeing them as the way to ensure that you can live the high life, demonstrate the bling, and because staying in school and putting your place, yourself to the discipline of study and opportunities, that is a lot more difficult. So we've got to ensure that that hegemony that gangs are managing to impose on many of our communities, that we interrupt that and we break that and we respond to that effectively. So we accept that the function of the gangs have changed, but we do think that we've got to take what the SAPS is saying in respect of how do we deal with that. We're not going to address the dysfunction in many of our poor communities through those families. Those family structures are destroyed through both the legacy of apartheid and the deepening levels of poverty, where the mothers and the fathers can't have job opportunities, and it's just so difficult in those households. So the only way we're going to reinstate the culture and the value system of our society is in the schools. The schools themselves are becoming war zones that we see by many of the manifestations. And again, it seems that some of our initiatives, both from the management of the school as well as SAPS and the other policing agencies, are reactive to that challenges instead of making sure that schools are a safe environment and that we support learners to make their way through the schools. We're really excited about the fact of how government's going to collaborate with community organizations in their various manifestations, and we hope that that conversation can be taken up to the Section 77 so that we at that level can in detail look at what does that partnership look like and how do we support each other. But in respect of the contribution that community organizations must take place, we hope that the leadership of the agencies responsible for dealing with crime will appreciate that there's a party politicizing of the initiatives around community policing. and so different levels of government has different social structures and policing forums, and they're largely using that to undermine each other and undermine and bring about divisions in that communities. That's certainly an area that an intervention has to be made, because it seems that often there's not the emotional and political maturity amongst many of the political leaders who just see the issues of crime as a way to get into political office and garner vote, and don't see it as a longer-term program that we must work on together, no matter what party you belong to, or no matter what level of government you come from. And so we do want to see that there's an improved capacity of the state and the depoliticizing it, and that there's clearer central coordination of the various initiatives. So if there's a metro police somewhere, they can't just be going about doing their own thing, sometimes in competition and in conflict with what's happening with the authorized policing agency of SAPS, and so that has to be dealt with. We're really concerned that there are inadequate resourced police services across the board, whether it's at the stations, the men in blue on the streets, or the facilities, whether it's cars, bulletproof vests, or any of the other resources that they require. And so there's got to be an urgent jacking up of that. We know that there's been new resources allocated, but we haven't seen that on the street in a real way manifesting in where our people experience policing. We hope that the training of police in key areas will also improve, because our information is that a lot of the matters that go to the criminal justice system does not lead to conviction. In fact, the conviction rate is probably around 12%. So many of the criminals take a better chance of getting away with their crimes than if they had played the lotto. And so that's got to be something that we deal with a lot more urgency. And this includes issues of domestic violence that's becoming a growing problem that's eluding and undermining the fragments of our social cohesion. The community challenges is the divisions amongst communities. This question about party lines that we raised before has to be addressed with central coordination. We have to find a way to provide communities with resources and help them to come together and democratize their activities, because there's great goodwill people that step up in the communities and are prepared to take up on the antagonism of the police, of the criminals in those communities and the gangs, but they don't always have sufficient support from the police. And so we've got to make sure that we provide those community activists with greater support. Otherwise, we'll just see rising levels of intimidation and fear, and we'll see the decline of any of the community initiatives to deal with these issues. We've seen these gangs expand into the metro areas, but we now also see them expanding into the rural areas. And so we think there also we need dedicated responses, because the peri-urban small towns, the coastal fishing communities, are seeing increased drug trafficking, and that's being exchanged for many of the fishing resources that are coming out of that area. And so we'd also like to hear about the specific interventions and strategy for those areas and how we can respond to those communities. We very briefly want to highlight the urgent steps that we think should be dealt with. We've got to end gang violence. The government must liaise with the NGOs in a more coordinated way and strengthen the accountability with the police. There's got to be an end to all of the corruption in the state as well as in the police, because too many community members are talking about the linkages between gangsters and police still. And then we want to see an evaluation of the performance of police. We can't just be throwing resources at it, but we're not getting the outcomes. Because it's great to hear about the statistics of everything that has been done, but surely the objective must be to bring down the manifestation of that crime in people's lived experiences. We also want to see patrols in industrial areas, greater safety on trains and public transport, and we want to see the dismissal of police who are in any way compromised in respect of the gangs. The question of firearms has to be dealt with more differently. We understand that the police staff must have firearms, but we think there should be a concerted effort to move towards the removal of all other firearms from public in the community, so that we can ensure that the huge level of deaths brought about through firearms that is minimized. And then finally, we want to talk about the strategy on drugs. The war on drugs doesn't appear to be working if we just look at the manifestation and the greater level of the destruction of lives of young people and sections of our community. So just a hard hand is not addressing that issue. We think that the Constitutional Court, the ruling on the smoking and the growing of marijuana in people's homes, that goes some way towards decriminalizing youngsters for very minor offenses in the scheme of things. we must be going after the drug lords, those who are running the shebeens and selling the poison to our children. But if we look on balance at what's happening in our communities, alcohol has a much more destructive impact on communities than what marijuana or dacha has. And so there's got to be a measured approach towards it. So we think that that must be dealt with differently. Because when we look at what happened, especially in the United States at the end of Prohibition, when hard alcohol was banned, people took softer forms of alcohol. And you could use the money that was taxed from many of the alcohol that then came into the system legally to raise the awareness level of young people about the dangers of alcohol, and in this case, the dangers of drugs. So there can be a much more positive, constructive intervention on how we tackle the war on drugs. But the present initiatives that we've had in the past of just trying to stamp it out, that clearly has not brought about the desired results. And in our experiences with other attempts on prohibition, the results are not very good. There's been great examples in sections of England, in Uruguay, and other countries of how people respond to drug addiction and drug abuse and drug sales differently. We must outlaw the criminals that sell the drugs to our people, but not turn the poor victims into criminals themselves. So we want to ask that that be looked at differently, that the war on drugs be taken at a different level and dealt with differently, that sees addiction and abuse of these drugs as an illness the same as we see alcoholism, and that we have constructive and different interventions to help to address those issues. So we really would want to have an opportunity to in more detail talk about the issue about how do we deal with drug abuse and the drug smuggling as in a different way. Because our experiences are that drugs are the main source of incomes of many of the criminal networks. So if we were to provide public sources of TIC or other alternatives to TIC, at least at health facilities, then we could help to break down the addiction of many of the young people who get into that through experimentation, peer pressure, and a whole lot of societal issues. But we got to get people out of there. So criminalize the distributors, but go more easy on those who are the users and find more constructive ways to get them out of that, and so that we can have and make a more constructive contribution. So in conclusion, Chair, we just want to say that 20 years later, the lived experiences of people are that things are getting worse in the working class communities. Drug gangs and the violence associated with that is getting more difficult. In spite of the many initiatives that government's taken to address the socioeconomic environment, there are still many socioeconomic issues that must be confronted, as well as the spatial issues of apartheid that must be dealt with. Because the reality is the majority of the criminality that people experience are in working class communities and not really in the middle classes or in the fancy suburbs. Then we do need radical new solutions that are based on global best practices to be part of the plans that we take forward. And Chair, we finally want to say that we thank you for the opportunity to speak to our public representatives and especially the opportunity to the Minister. And we hope that we can make a contribution to the urgent efforts around this room that's meant to ensure the improved safety of our people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Inderis. Thank you. We'll go to the next presentation, Popkru. Thank you, sir. You're welcome.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. As Pop Crew, we have sent our presentation to the Secretary. I'm not sure if it has been distributed, but I've got other copies here with me that could be distributed to the members. As Pop Crew, we'll first like to thank the committee for inviting us to make submission on the National Anti-Gangsterism Strategy. We'd also like to applaud the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee for the efforts put into developing this strategy. With the strategy based on four pillars, women development, social partnership, special design, criminal justice process, to ensure that gangsterism that is ravaging our communities is not only an issue to be addressed by only police officers, but all of us as communities, we want to reflect and share with committee our inputs on how best can we combat gang criminal activities and gangsterism. Our submission as Pop Group therefore is structured as follows. Creation of the task team. It should first and foremost be acknowledged that gangsterism is a sophisticated form of criminality. Gang members will always come together in accordance with their skills to plot and meticulously execute their criminal activities. encountering and successfully thwarting their missions. SARS will then need to establish a task team which shall be dedicated to fighting gangsterism in all 9 provinces. The task team should be made up of officers with specialized training, particularly in intelligence gathering, so as to be proactive in dealing with this scourge of gangsterism. We further submit that to register sustainable victory over gangsterism, we must build a dedicated task team that will be able to fight crime with modern mechanisms. We however want to submit that the establishment of this task team should be done in accordance with the legislative frameworks. Building relationship with with communities. The strategy correctly encourages strong social partnership, which will include, amongst other, the establishment of community safety forums and community police forums. However, we as Pop Crew find disheartening and leaving us pessimistic is the feasible relationship currently existing between our communities and law enforcement agencies, in particular police officers. The relationship between the police and the community has collapsed and it needs to be urgently restored. Community policing forums, which will serve as a link between the community and police officers, and further to facilitate community involvement and participation, are unfortunately currently dysfunctional. This collapsed relationship perpetuates serious mistrust between the community and police officers, which results in police officers being perceived as enemies and subsequently attacked by community members. Although the strategy mentioned this kind of relationship as mechanism to potentially eradicate gangsterism in our communities, there is no way in which it explains how these feasible relationships are going to be strengthened and be made to work effectively. We therefore submit that these forums be resuscitated such that they can serve as vehicles that will help in combating crime and building a bridge between community and police officers in our communities. It is inevitable fact that prevalence of any concerted criminal activity shall only be defeated or eradicated by strong partnership between communities and men in blue uniform.
Sorry, what about women?
No, men in not in a gender context. Yeah, in a women context. Thanks, Minister. We however submit that all members of the CPFs and CSFs and other structures helping in fighting against crime be vetted such that these criminals do not harbor themselves within these structures to advance their own criminal activities. Lack of resources in police stations. Though it is acknowledged by the National Anti-Gangsterism Strategy that gang-related incidents are prevalent across 9 provinces, the reality is that the requisite resources needed to deal with this problem are still lopsidedly allocated. The uneven allocation of these resources is somewhat exacerbated by lack of proper spatial design and population dynamics in some of the areas. Populous and on numerous occasions raised a grave concern on the fact that South African Police Service women and physical resources allocation has been and continues to be a deep-seated challenge with severe adverse effects to both police officers and the community at large. Majority police stations, more especially in township and rural areas, do not have basic equipment such as well-functional CCTV cameras, bulletproof windows, butler doors, while members do not have adequate protection gears. This effectively renders these police stations and police officers on the ground susceptible to incursion by heavily armed gangsters. This unfortunately leaves many of our members unnecessarily perishing at the hands of these heartless criminals. These gangsters have declared war on our police officers, our first line of defense and provider of security to all our communities. It is against this background that we demand that police killing should be declared treason. Another hindrance to the effective and efficient fighting of gangsterism and other forms of crime is understaffed police stations. It is practically impossible for understaffed police to service and respond to the crime scene because stations cannot be left unattended. Most police stations find themselves with only one police vehicle and two police officers to service their widely scattered jurisdictions. This kind of situation affects and prolongs the turnaround time for police officers to report on crime scene or reported complaints. We would like to emphasize, as we have previously averred to this very same committee, that the current bloated SAP's top management structure consumes bigger chunk of the departmental budget. We therefore submit that the structure be downsized and redirect all resources needed at the police station where the actual battle against crime is waged. Configuration of the criminal justice cluster. We have noted that the strategy has muted this disintegrated and incoherent implementation and coordination approach of this strategy, with some responsibilities and roles allocated to different departments, among others, Department of Basic Education and other tiers of government, provincial and local. This disintegrated and incoherent approach reflects a dismal failure to come up with implementable strategies that can be used to combat gang-related crimes and other forms of crimes. We are of the firm view as Pop Crew that any crime preventing and fighting strategy should locate SAPs at the center of implementation and operation of that particular strategy. We want to take this opportunity to further advance our submission to the Portfolio Committee on how department can effectively work together to combat gangsterism. We submit that there must be a value chain within the criminal justice cluster departments, referring to the Department of Police, Department of Correctional Services, and Department of Cultural Development and Justice, wherein a synergy will be built in terms of crime prevention and combating. It is a known fact, which is also acknowledged by this strategic plan, that imprisonment serves as the rise of persons to higher levels in the gang ladder. We therefore want to submit that criminal justice cluster departments stop working in silos but begin to synergize their efforts and resources to develop one comprehensive crime prevention and fighting strategy to deal with all forms of crimes, including gangsterism. With this submission, we envisage that our correctional centers, in a situation where arrest and conviction were secured, are able to rehabilitate prisoners and eliminate recidivism. It is an indisputable fact that our correctional centers are overcrowded, and this poses serious, unsavory, and life-threatening working conditions to our members. This overcrowding, without doubt, presents conducive environment to breed gangsterism in the correctional centers. Gangs are formed in our correctional center to terrorize our members. The situation is exacerbated by understaffed correctional centers. There is an urgent need to augment human capital at the correctional center to be able to at least achieve reasonable and acceptable ratio correctional officer to prison population. Early this year, there were unfortunate incidents of attacks and stabbing of three correctional officers by inmates at Hoed Mood and Kroonstad correctional centers. At the time of the attack at the Hoed Mood correctional center, only three correctional officers were on duty guarding 300 inmates. In conclusion, Chair, we have noted with dismay that the strategy does not provide any tangible and concrete solution to deal with the scourge of gangsterism and other form of crimes. This integrated and incoherent approach on implementation and coordination is a recipe for failure. We therefore call upon SAP to develop a new strategy to fight gangsterism. We, however, pleased by the acknowledgement by the strategy that there is a need to involve community in the fight against crime. We want to seize this opportunity to call upon all community structures mandated to fight crime and gangsterism to closely and synergize their work with that of police, such that they make impact in fighting this scourge in our communities. Pop Crew further seeks to applaud men and women in blue who always ensure that despite difficult working conditions are determinately pursuing Chapter 12 of the National Development Plan, which is to build safer communities. We thank you.
Thank you very much. To Pop Crew, then in terms of the community organizations, is there any other written submissions?
Sorry, sir. Yes, yes. United Front. You can go in. Thank you, sir. I just maybe, in terms of time, if we can keep it, you know, to the point, to give everybody an opportunity. Thank you, sir. Of course, the honourable members must still get an opportunity, of course, as well. Sorry, is there any hard copies for the members? Okay. Thank you. You can go. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. If I can just get a copy, a hard copy, because the process will be that we will be also hearing from the women and children and mums for justice. We have now all been male that has been talking, and I'm afraid that we will be accused of being patriarchs if we don't give our woman an opportunity to speak. So you can get a hard copy that I will just indicate to them their slides, which they can talk from their slides. Mr. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. I wish us to express our gratitude for the opportunity to afforded to us to address you all. I would like to, before I make a presentation, just to raise a few concerns and make a few introductory remarks. We promise we will not be long. We will keep it short and simple. But thanks to you, Mr. Chair, for arranging this. We believe it's an long overdue engagement. We would have had this engagement on the 21st of November, only to find our minister and the national commissioner in London or wherever with the Interpol conference. Nevertheless, it is hoped that we shall share our challenges, our frustrations, but more so solutions to the crime and violence issues at hand, and more specific the scourge of gangsterism plaguing our communities. Allow me to address one or two concerns first. First of all, we question the seriousness and commitment from both politicians and the police in finding workable solutions to our problems. Mr. Chair, I have in my possession the gang strategy of 2004, the gang strategy of 2009, and 10 years later, we're still having to sit around the table to work out a gang strategy. I think that is a major reason for concerns. You must understand that we do not get paid for what we are doing. In fact, we put our lives on the line in pursuit of a just, safe, and secure environment. And we as activists expect government to show and give us respect in this regard. I just want to cite two examples. On the May 25th, 2018, we were hastily assembled in Mitchell's Plain by the minister to a workshop on gangsterism, and it was promised there that a report will be made available to us within 30 days. We are still waiting for that report. Now, you must remember that this was a hastily arranged meeting where I had to sit aside other appointments, other events. People had to take leave, people had to stay away from work, which they did. And only now, nearly a year later, we are still waiting for the report on the gang workshop that we had. Mr. Chair, in the midst of the shutdown movements, we as organizations came together and we have decided that we will not follow the shutdown movement approach. We will not expose our people to inconvenience and to state violence, as we saw what happened in Bontebal and in other areas where I was present. So we got together and we engaged CASATU as a strategic partner, and we decided on a Section 77 process. We are of the view that the workers are bearing the brunt of crime and violence from work and to work. If it's not Metro fail, it's the taxis that fights. They've been robbed and they've been murdered and they've been killed and assaulted on their way to work from work and in the community itself. On both occasions, neither the minister or a representative of his office, nor the national commissioner or a representative of his office attended these meetings, which raises serious concerns about their commitment to finding a solution to the gang problems. The second meeting, the provincial government sent a brigadier but with no mandate. To our dismay, we have now learned about divisions and factions within the service with regard to the anti-gang unit. These type of behavior we can ill afford if we hope to be successful in eradicating gangsterism. Mr. Chair, it is a biblical principle that a house divided against itself cannot stand. We're playing right in the hands of the enemy. We regard ourselves as moderates who do not wish to take to the streets to solve our issues, but if push comes to shove, we will not hesitate to do so. At this time, it seems that it's the only language that this government understands. If there's violence and if there's chaos and mayhem. We therefore urge the powers that be today to give close attention to our pleas, and we once again reach out a hand of cooperation. We have the passion, experience, and expertise amongst us to assist you in this regard. The civil society organizations, amongst others here today, are CASATO, which we are a strategic partner with, the United Public Safety Front, other community-based organizations, CPFs, faith-based organizations, and all the other organizations that was introduced earlier. Minister Berke, your statement on your budget address in September, or when you made the stats available, was Africa is at war with itself. And if you go and you see what's happening in Mitchell's Plain, more than 200 people murdered since March last year until now, it's not even February yet. 203, I believe, Lynn Phillips at the back can confirm that. This daily murdering, the latest in Mitchell's Plain is a war zone. A person, as a young girl, 22 years old, has been murdered innocently in front of the court on Friday. And that is how the list can go on and on. So yes, we are indeed at war. We are experiencing a crime crisis of epidemic proportions. We, the citizens of the Western Cape, notes with serious concern the issue of safety and security with reference to gang violence, gang murder, attempted murder, rape, and violence against women and children in the Western Cape. And in particular, the Cape Flats have reached alarming proportions. We demand the following. We demand an end to gang violence in our communities. As I said, last year, over 800, and I stand to be corrected, have been killed by gangsters in our communities in the last financial year. The majority of those are innocent and been killed by stray bullets. Our solution, all levels of government should work together to provide public safety to our communities. The emphasis was also given also by CASAT as well as by POPCR. We need to have an integrated multi-sectoral approach to this. We agree it's not SAP's issue alone, but unfortunately they are at the front of the are in the firing line of this war. The implementation of the POPCR legislation is now critical that the implementation takes place. We haven't seen major successes in terms of this act. Safe to say that the police have one or two success stories, but we believe that the implementation of the POPCR legislation is now critically important. A national multi-sectoral forum, including civil society, to monitor and to evaluate implementation of projects and programs, for example, on the province. Now, we have in this province the anti-gang strategy, and only one civil society organization, the VPUU, is represented on that forum. And we cannot have where government departments alone is seeking you know, solutions to those problems. So we demand that we have a multi-sectoral forum where the civil society can play a decisive role, and also the monitoring and evaluation of such action. We demand a responsive government that listens to its people. The different spheres of government are not listening to us, the community. They have fostered their own political agendas and have politicized crime. They are masters at the blame game and continuously pass the buck. We have a provincial government whose big difference, if you take a bucket and you go to the ocean and you take out the water out of the ocean and you ask what's the difference, that is the difference that the Department of Community Safety makes in this province. The city in particular have selectively used the Metro Police to fight crime in white communities together with security companies and have neglected working with poorer communities such as Nyanga and Khayelitsha. The City of Cape Town Safety and Security Unit engaged in unlawful intelligence gathering on individuals and organizations. No mandate to do search warrants, raid houses, and interrogate suspects. Again, we said all spheres of government should do joint visits to communities and explain the role of various... We demand that government end all corruption. We have now seen the Zondo Commission and we are appalled and disgusted by what is going on and what is being dished out to us by the Zondo Commission and other commissions as well. We believe that the provision of services to our poor people and our communities are being hampered by corrupt officials in all levels of government. We demand that tenderpreneurs and the contact in government should be exposed. Solution, government at national level make public a list of officials that have been disciplined as a result of corrupt practices. All cases of corruption should be dealt with speedily. We demand that all police stations and station commanders be evaluated by our communities. Station commanders, cluster commanders and the provincial commissioner are not accountable to the community, contrary to what has been said today and what has been said on other platforms. There is a lack of leadership and commitment from station commanders and senior managers to spur the staff on to do their best to fight crime. All communities should have a say in any appointment of station commanders and senior managers. We demand that station commanders and senior managers are subject to a process of community review and thus be included in the performance reviews. This should happen every 6 months. We demand that regular patrols in our industrial areas, Kasatu has spoken to that already, where our workers are being robbed of their hard-earned pay and being assaulted, and they go home without a pay. Then I'm going to ask if I have a copy of the copy. Can I get a copy of the presentation? Still, you have a copy. Okay, I'm going to ask Lucinda Evans from the Felisa Abafazi to speak on the demand of the Children Commission as well as on the Domestic Violence Act and other GBV issues.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. I would like to observe full protocol. I want to cite three cases. One is in Mariesburg. I hope everybody knows where Mariesburg is. 13-year-old child was found unconscious with two adults. The middle part of her jeans were cut. It is now 3 months later. Chairperson, we are still waiting on the DNA results for an arrest. There were two adult men found with her when she was found in this house. Number two, 48 hours ago, a woman in Luanlo was found murdered. Her boyfriend chopped off a leg at the femur. The femur is the strongest bone in your body. But it's also the bone, if you break, you bleed out and you die. He chopped a leg off. He opened up a leg, cut the leg open in front of a 1 year and 2 month old child. And then on Sunday morning at 7 a.m., a woman walked 5 kilometers to seek help at the police station. She wasn't crying. She wasn't distressed. She walked in there and she said, husband is going to kill her. The officer at the desk told her, come back on Monday and get a protection order. And this is the horror that women are facing. An injury to one vagina, as my t-shirt says, is an injury to all our vaginas. I want to speak to the committee today about the training that some of the officers have received, and I take it for granted that everybody had the same training. But why are some of the officers in some police stations still looking for the blue eye, the broken lip? Why is it that the officer cannot determine when it's emotional abuse or when it's psychological abuse? Do we need to quantify these crimes before women get the services? Secondly, Chairperson, I want to speak about the victim support room of all 152 police stations in this Western Cape. I wish you could drive with me to certain police stations. There are no volunteers in these victim support rooms. These volunteers play an essential role to help the CSC with the non-criminal aspect of domestic violence. There are no volunteers. Those rooms are empty. And my plea this morning is that we seriously need to look at staffing those rooms with volunteer men and women. Those rooms should be operational for 24 hours, not the volunteers should be on call. Because of the high rates of violence we had, it is brutal. Secondly, I want to propose, Chairperson, that I know you stated that some of the other departments are not here. But we seriously need to have a conversation with the Department of Social Development. Currently, there are 16 clusters, and soon they're going to be districts. But one of the recommendations that we want to make is that a dedicated social worker be placed in each cluster so that that social worker would be able to support the volunteers in the victim support room. And coming back to the victim support rooms, I also want to propose that we find a funding module to have those volunteers work on an EPWP basis so that we incentivize those VEP rooms. Gone are the days where we have VEP rooms where there's no personnel. At the rate of violence that we have, and the President has made mention about the national crisis that we are in. As a civil society organization, I'm saying that when are we going to put words into action? Thirdly, I want to say, and also again, Chairperson, I know you've mentioned the department, but the White Door Emergency Safe Houses is dire needed. A White Door Emergency Safe House is a place where a woman can be sent from a police station, which is able to stay up to 7 days, and the social worker will sort her out there. And the recommendation that I want to make is that we need to look at speaking seriously to the Department of Social Development to roll more of these safe houses up, particularly looking at the rural area. Where does a woman go that lives in Maritzburg if she needs a safe house? A woman from Saldanha, she arrived at our White Door safe house on Friday. We struggled for 2 weeks to get her to escape from Saldanha to Wynberg. You're going to ask me the question, where was the police? Every time when she went to the police station, they told her she needed to get a protection order. They told her she needed to come back. She needs to come back when he's home. This man was violent, and what he did, he kept the baby behind. We still need to work with that same police station to get the baby. Thank you very much for the FCS unit, Chairperson, but we feel that there are too little women staff in the FCS unit. I want to pitch today to this committee that we seriously need to look at this unit by getting more women in this particular unit. Thank you to the good men that are doing their work. Sadly, not all of them is doing what they needed to do, because we see that women are still sitting 2-3 up until 5 hours before an officer is available. Why? Because the officer is so busy. 2-3 cases, one of the victims are going to wait a bit longer. And then I also want to, in conclusion, say that gender-based violence should take a priority. We should be represented in community safety forums, in community police forums, on provincial boards, and we should also be represented in the provincial and national components of SAP as civilians, because we cannot have people make decisions for our vagina without consulting us about our own vagina. So we need to, when we speak about partnership, what does that mean? How does that feel? When am I going to be invited to a partner, to an important meeting where I can say, police services, are you aware when there are no active shootings in Lavendale? Just look at the stats of how many 13 to 14 year old girls disappear and how many of them are coming back raped. And then we look at who are the rapers. Because if the gangsters are not shooting, they are then taking our children and raping them. I want to quickly go over to the children. We need a child commissioner as of yesterday. 2018 was a very, very bleak year for all communities because 78 children were murdered and killed. Some of those children were girl children. And currently we are very distressed that some of these court cases is still on the roll more than a year ago. So I know the Department of Justice is not here, but I want to say to them today that child murder should start taking priority. Parents cannot come to court for a year and a half, up to 2 years. It is secondary victimization. It's tearing that family apart, and that family needs closure. And then also I want to say thank you to organizations like Rape Crisis that are doing sterling work at court. But our magistrate needs to be retrained in how to interrogate survivors. You are re-raped on that stand. And I want to make a recommendation that some of these lawyers, there needs to be a standard put in place how you speak to a survivor. And then I want to say that even these officers that are perpetrators of gender-based violence, Minister, they should be suspended and stay suspended until the court case is over. We cannot have officers back at work while the case is going on and still intimidating our clients, our victims, our women, our mothers, our sisters. They must stay suspended. And then also, again, back to the Department of Justice, we are demanding that there be no bail for rapists. 500 rand, it is a joke. Our children's vaginas are valued at 500 rand bail. We want to say no bail for molesters. Even if he's a first-time offender, we hear every time he's a first-time offender, he's going to get bail. To come back out and rape our children, our mothers, our women, our omas, our babies. So I'm going to give over to Avril that's going to speak about the mothers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Your contribution. Let's go to the other participant. You're welcome, madam.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I'm from the Moms Move for Justice. Mostly, I'm working mostly with mothers that lost children through gang violence on the Cape Flats. So too many of our people have been killed by guns supplied by police officers to gangsters. We demand that those police officers are fired and criminally charged for aiding and betting criminals to kill our children. They belong in jail, and we urge government to do the right thing and take bold initiatives to stop this corrupt action by the police to make our communities safer places. We demand that firearms are removed from our communities and banned. We have seen the devastating effects of firearms that are used against our people by gangsters, and we demand that all firearms, legal and illegal, be removed from our communities and banned. The fact that SAPS cannot regulate its own firearms means that they cannot be trusted to regulate the firearms of legal firearm owners. All firearms in private possession should be banned, as it makes all our communities unsafe and terrifying places to live in. We have a case of intimidation against SAPS officials. The IO has not been to interview our victim, who happens to be a volunteer at the Moms Move for Justice. We are dealing with this on a daily basis. Why are we, as grieving moms who lost children through gang violence, not taken seriously? Why do rape victims have to suffer trauma upon trauma? Why are our cases pending for years? Is it because we are on the Cape Flats? When will General Chula honor our meetings and be present when we hand over our memorandums? When will the demands of the memorandums be met? We deserve answers and actions to our pleas, and not only empty promise to keep us quiet for a short while. Why are we being marginalized by the authorities? As an organization, we have acted with integrity, communicated with respect. However, this is not a reciprocal based on our live experience. Thank you, Honorable G. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you very much for your input. Other
Mr. Chair, there's only two more items,
okay.
If you might.
Thank you.
We might not have the opportunity again. So just indulge with us. Mr. Chair, the other thing most important, one of our demands is the establishment of community safety forums in this province. We had very successful ones, but because of politics, it died a slow death, and I listened to the presentation of the National Police as if community safety forums are up and running in this province. It is not. We need to have a vehicle for communities and government departments, both provincial, locally, and nationally, to engage with, and where we can put not only law enforcement or police matters on the agenda, but issues of developmental social development, education, economics, etc., etc. So we plead to the National Commissioner and to the Minister to please to make a concerted effort that this province establish community forums. And then lastly from my side, Mr. Chair, is the RAG, the Resource Allocation Guide. It is a bone of contention. It causes resentment in our communities. And we know about the High Court case where the Nanga CPA were involved with other civil organizations. We urgently demand that an independent researcher is being appointed, where we will be able to assist in that regard, and that findings of that research be made known to the public, and that we once and for all address the issue of this apartheid type of resources that was allocated during the 60s and 70s and 50s and the 1920s. So that is our demands. Would like to thank the Minister for being present, listening to the National Commissioner and his staff, to yourself and your team. Michael will just raise the issue which is very near to his heart, and then we will finish. Thank you.
You can go ahead, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and to the Honourable Minister. What is of concern to our communities, and it's a big concern, a confrontational role, especially of the city of Cape Town and the province towards national, and especially towards national SAPs, as if the police are a political entity or political party. The White Paper on Policing speaks about us moving towards a single police service. So the Minister sits here, and we hope he's coming to realize that within the next 2 or 3 years. But just outside of Parliament, where the VIP building is, the DA has put up a poster, a provincial police service for you. The arrogant and unfortunate aspect of the politicization of policing that has directly affected our communities. It is dividing our communities, and it is not in the best interest of our communities. So we would like that to be looked at, because it's quite clear. Parallel structures is being set up by the city of Cape Town. I cannot find any intelligence legislation or enabling police legislation that gives municipalities an intelligence role or can have an intelligence arm. Yes, they are gathering information on individuals, organizations. In September, when we had our meeting at Cosata House, two of the operatives were sent to our meeting, which they call themselves the Special Investigation Unit. After the former mayor has raised the issue, they've changed it to the security
the safety and security internal unit, but they're still acting as an intelligence agency. So we need the South African Police Service, the Inspector General of Intelligence, this portfolio committee to act with urgency and launching criminal investigation into this unit. They've also been doing gang profiling. We appreciate the roles of Metro Police, law enforcement, traffic. We want them as partners for safety within our communities. But don't fragment our forces and don't set up in the political role the enforcement agencies which further divide our communities and hampers the fight against gangsterism and drugs out there. And it is concerning to note, while we have a number of different units, you have your Thunder, you have your Combat, you have your TRTs, your Stabilization Unit, in this province, I believe in some media reports there's a moat, or a moat is going to be established in this province. I don't know what moat stands for. But we cannot fragment, or the police cannot fragment its fight against gangsterism and drugs by having all of these units and they function all separately. And I must commend, and I think it's a best practice, I was invited by the acting station commander Blantyre Saps on Saturday, Lieutenant Colonel Brickles, where the anti-gang unit was present, where Thunder was present, Combat DRTs was present, the community police forums was invited to, councillors, your neighborhood watches, your street committees, and your CPF. And there, the anti-gang unit explained the mandate to the community. Clearly, what role they must play, what role the community can play. So that is a best practice that needs to be rolled out, not only in this province, but across South Africa, so that we can see that there's a partnership. Yes, there's challenges. There are lazy police officers. There are station commanders who's not worth their salt, but we're not attacking SAPs in the political manner. What we are saying, let us take hands and work together. But we cannot have rogue intelligence units. We cannot have rogue elements running around amok and we're defeating the ends of what we need to achieve. And I can tell you, there's one councillor, in particular in Bontville, Councillor Angus McKenzie, is not playing a very constructive role within our communities. There are three cases of one person against him. The detective never once came to that person. When she went to go and speak to that station commander of Bishop Labour Saps, she was told one case was withdrawn, no reasons given. Politicians are not the only cows that cannot be touched. We want to make an appeal to you. I've got the case numbers. I will hand it over through to you for speedy investigation and for a report back to that complainant. Because we as communities will exercise our right. Politicians are not the only cows. If our community members and leaders are being treated like scum by some of these politicians, we will perform our citizen service and we will hand you over to the police service so that the police can do the work. But Honorable Chairperson, this speaks to one police service and I hope we're going to achieve it and not an election promise of having a provincial police service because it's defeating the purpose of playing into the hands of gangsters. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We need to move on to the members. Our time is really running very fast and we've got still item two as well. Let's start with, you find Honorable Kota Bana, then Honorable Maki, and then we'll come to the side.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought this meeting would be a hot one. I didn't know it would be this hot. Dr. Saps, in the presentation it says there is a single control room for the gang unit. Is that a single national control room? I thought it would be effective maybe to have a war room in each province, but I'm not sure when you were discussing the structure. So perhaps you could put your microphone off my to help. Thank you. And do you have any members of the former anti-gang unit in this one? You know, there was obviously enormous expertise lost when the specialized units were shut down, I think, by Celebi in about 96. So is there anybody left or ex? I know you're saying that you're pulling in all the students, the new graduates, but I'm somewhat fearful, considering especially the policing numbers are so low in this province, that taking senior members from stations may actually gut those stations. So where are these people coming from? And are you seeing a drop in the murders and specifically the civilian deaths as a result of this strategy? I know it's fairly new, but you're on the ground. You know, especially when a child is caught in the crossfire, it's front page news, and so one imagines that the deaths are still very high in relation to the gangs. But are you on the ground seeing an improvement because of the strategy? One of the biggest problems experienced is that there are always claims that the drug lords have certain SAPS members on their payroll. And so when a team arrives to do a raid, there's nothing there. There are no drugs, there's nothing. Completely cleaned out because they're forewarned. And I've heard this in every province in the country. So, you know, what you're saying is that you're going to vet the members of this team, but we've heard about the difficulties of vetting senior members of the SAPS. In fact, there were many who refused. So how long is this going to take, or is it just a wish list item to actually vet every member? Of course it's crucial, but the reality and what should happen are not necessarily the same thing. And then finally, I frequently hear that the prison gangs are linked to the street gangs, and new inmates are forced to join, and they then emerge some years later as fully fledged gang members. And is there a strategy now to deal with that link? I'm hearing that the DNA tests are not being done on prisoners before they're being released. I'd like you to address that, but that already puts the SAPS on the back foot. If you don't have the DNA of these hardened criminals who are going out there straight into the arms of the gangs, I think you're at a huge disadvantage.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question to clarify myself. Is there any law or any act of parliament that prevents people from belonging to a gang? If there is, how does it operate? If there is no such law, it means people can belong to a gang and we wait until they kill someone or they rape someone. Is that how it works? My question is linked to, in my village in Tzaneen, when I arrived during the festive season, there was a gang of primary school children. They called themselves Mahandret. Primary school children. It's a gang in a village that people are afraid of. How does that happen? Who organizes babies to form a gang? And if they've got a right to belong to a gang, what are we waiting for? Are we waiting for them to kill somebody or to start raping? How does the anti-gang strategy work when it comes to such situations? Thank you, Chairperson.
Mark, Honorable Ramat Lakane.
Well, thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the the minister, the police, the presentation, and the civil society presenting critical issues. I think we need to thank all of them. Basically, it's informed the committee about the challenges, some that we know, some that we don't know. I was listening to the case about women and the Saldana. I was listening to all of that and saying, but it doesn't sound correct. But of course, you were talking to the police, they would basically follow up on that particular aspect. Chair, I have a couple of questions. And generally, can I also say that I do think that we must continue to thank the men and women in blue that under difficult condition they continue to soldier on and make sure that we sleep peaceful at night. I think sometimes we forget to thank you because we have questions to ask. Now it takes me to my questions. When you speak about capabilities in your slide, I just want to understand the it's on 10, page 10 of your presentation. It sounds to me as if you're creating something new, whereas you already have the existing capabilities in the self. So you're not necessarily creating a new capabilities. You have already integrated capabilities that you may add on and beef up and reskill, but you already have. So I was when the presentation was made, I almost had you saying this is almost like it's something that you're going to start which doesn't exist, which may give the reader an impression that this capability doesn't exist. And my understanding, they do exist. Now, I just want to understand the on that same breath, Commissioner. You know, the arrest, we must say that there's good work that has been done. But the arrest must go together with the prosecution. Particularly when we have the priority of gang issue. They can't wait for 2 years on a long court roll. I mean, you have a special organized court in Khayelitsha here that could be utilized to prioritize some of these cases that you call high flyers, because only prosecution will act as a deterrent to particular action. So are you working with the Department of Justice around this to forming a integrated team that can be able to help you to offload the role in terms of basically specialized role that deals with this, if you can maybe help us to understand that in a multidisciplinary that you talked about. Then the second one that Chair, is the in your presentation when you mentioned groups, 20 groups, Cape Town, Western Cape, 10 groups, Eastern Cape. What is the definition of a group? Or are you not wanting to call it by their name? Is this gangs? Or maybe the gangs, they've got a number of names. Some of them are various names. I don't call their name because I don't want to promote their names. But isn't it this gang that you're talking about? And if they are, and I know that if you were to look at number of cases already, they were already declared that gangs is illegal act. The Americans grouping, the Clever Boys, the Dixie, all of them were arrested, they were put through, and they were all declared that they are illegal organizations, which then means in terms of poker legislation, it then means that if these are a grouping that you call them grouping and they're actually gangs, it maybe you'll explain it. It means therefore that I don't want you to say their names, but in the Western Cape they are slightly a little bit more than what I see the 20. And the notorious ones. Maybe the notorious are in the 20. It's a high one. Then a quick one. On your slide, when you have a pyramid of slides, I just want to find out a slide number where you have on slide 7. Interprovincial, when the pyramid, where you have this, you've got transitional, then so transnational, interprovincial, and high flyers and so on. Is it correct understanding that the IMPI project, does it form part of this area? Or has IMPI actually disappeared? Or has it been integrated into this particular area? And I'm happy that I had a chat, Minister, with some mothers in Bondi, in Hanover Park. They call Mothers for Justice. Some of the feedback they give, the old mama, they're saying since the anti-gang unit was launched, there is some degree of stability in the way that they are able to sleep at night, some of them, they say. Initially, when they were sleeping on the floor, they say they now can at least sleep on the bed, which means there is an impact that the anti-gang unit is making. So I think we need to give your feedback for what they do say. However, I want to ask the unit itself. You're saying 80% is under OD, general. So it doesn't clear whether the Western Cape is part of the 80% under the organizational development. The last time when we had a conversation about it was whether it is already legalized, is it already in terms of SEP being registered as a proper unit, is it functioning in that way, in a way that it has a proper resources. I do hear you mention 103, and I did hear you mention 89 cars. The question the last time was a technical one. I just want to, we don't see you often, so to hear whether this is now officially being registered as a unit. While I'm on that one, what is MOT? I think I had been questioned. I want to ask you, General, this abbreviation, MORT. This is a major offensive reaction team. I want to know whether that is also another unit, or is this a task team that has been established. Is MOD integrated, operating with the anti-gang unit, or is it a competition towards the anti-gang unit? And I know in your own defense, General, the last time you said it is the prerogative of the provincial commissioner to establish the teams. But I would want to just to know whether this is a team which is operating parallel to the existing one, or is it an integrated capability building of what you need to achieve in the Western Cape. So on the other part of the presentation, I do want to recognize the presentation that has been made by the civil society. And I do want to, I'm worried about the pop crew. There are three things that I want to raise that the provincial, maybe national commissioner and the minister. The partnership issue. The pop crew makes a point about it being collapsed, that is a collapse. Particularly when it looks at about dysfunctionality, community policing forum, all of that structure that's supposed to be a complementary to the police, the pop crew says that has collapsed. So the question is going to be the kind of work that we need to do to dealing with that particular collapse. The top heavy, the resourcing of that structure is another issue. Maybe that's another debate that we need to have. But that's worry if is the best repository of information the communities that issue and the union that operate in SEPs says it has collapsed. We need to believe that it actually has collapsed. So what are then the efforts to make sure that it's going to revive that particular structure? United Safety Forum Front, I do want to say that I have listened tentatively to what they presented in the presentation. I'm sure we on the things that they raised, including the general demands about establishment of the Community Safety Forum. It's an important one if you want to isolate it, because that brings multidisciplinary structure into functional area. I do hear the municipal police, but that's, I think we will discuss that tomorrow. We'll have some questions about what has been raised as a competitional issue. The mothers here, police welfare issue. Chair, I think that the call that has been made about integration of civil society in the civil society structure is a genuine one. But I think perhaps the civilian secretariat would probably have to grapple us to in fact look into this particular matter and report to the committee how this particular voice can be enhanced, can enhance the work that is done by the police, which I think is an important voice that we need to get. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. To serve in slide 14, you are saying 1,536 schools linked to police stations. Out of how many schools are not linked to the police station? In SARS again, in slide 16 on environmental design, you said there are factors that impacting on the ability to police conventionally include lack of basic infrastructure, poor lighting. Are you having meetings with the local municipality to raise all these issues? My third question, in the Pop Crew presentation, they said majority of police stations, more especially in townships and rural areas, do not have basic equipment such as well-functional CCTV cameras. National Commissioner, can you please give us progress of the installation of CCTV cameras in the police station level? My last question, in slide 12 of the Western Cape presentation, you said cases are pending for years. Did they give you reasons why the cases are pending? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for all the presentations. I think a key takeaway from all the inputs across the board really boiled down to a drum I've been beating on the committee for pretty much the last 4.5 years, which is those basic pillars of policing reform that are urgently needed. None of them especially insightful or groundbreaking in terms of professionalization, which the NDP speaks to, localization in particular of resources, which the National Commissioner has committed the SAPS to. We're just still awaiting for that to happen, as well as specialization, which is what the anti-gang units would be one example of. So I'm not quite hearing anything especially novel or groundbreaking. And it's really coming back to the old matter of implementation, which is why my first question, the the National Commissioner mentioned in his opening remarks that the phase that follows stabilization when it comes to the anti-gang strategy is then normalization, and that's the building of the relationships with communities so that the local level policing can sustain the achievements and the progress from the targeted intervention of the anti-gang strategy, especially concerning the specialized units or task teams. Now, obviously, that normalization phase would require strong trust between the local police and the communities. And really, that's achieved by having a basis that is it's premised on having adequately staffed, resourced, trained, and equipped police stations who are then both in reality and perceived to be responsive to the policing needs of those communities. So the question really is, how can this committee, and in particular, how can those gang violence affected communities have the confidence that those conditions required and conducive for normalization will be achieved in light of the historic and chronic under-resourcing, under-staffing, under-equipping that has come up over and over again in this committee, both from members' oversight visits as well as echoed in a number of the presentations today. Because if you don't have that in place, it means the information, the tip-offs, the sort of real-time intelligence that the police need to implement their preventive and reactive operations is not being fed through, and therefore we can't systemically sustain the outcomes of such a strategy. My second question would be best directed to the minister. Springboarding from slide 5 in the SAPS presentation, which spoke broadly to the need for the establishment of these dedicated specialized units in general. The focus obviously now is on the anti-gang one. Now, this issue of specialized units, as we know, nothing new. It's been in the NDP adopted in 2012, we'll recall. In addition, we've had the announcement in 2016 of the specialized units within the Hawks, looking at illegal drugs and firearms. But the long-standing question and the concern, given these announcements, given the documents that have come from government and from departments, is whether there is adequate political will, really, to drive the specialization in the police service, to see through these commitments to full implementation, and to do so with the urgency and the speed required. Because if we're now looking at the start of 2019, which means the former president made the announcement on specialized units in the Hawks almost 3 years ago, and we're not yet at the required level and capacity, then big questions hang over whether the political will, as the root impetus, if you will, or the root driver for achieving these outcomes is there. So, I mean, for the minister, what assurance can he give the committee of that sustained political will, and especially for the communities affected by gang violence, so we can see not just ad hoc, haphazard, short-term achievements, but year-on-year progress, so that even long after the minister's term will have expired, his successors will have something to build on, and we don't have the haphazard zigzagging that has been the approach when it comes to specialization broadly in the SAPS, but in particular with the specialized units that have been announced. And then my third and final question, Chair, I believe General Judah is here, is that correct? He is here, because I heard his name being mentioned and I saw his face coming in. Because it relates specifically to the Western Cape, and there have been a number of allegations made concerning cooperation, alignments, partnership between the SAPS in the province as well as the Metro Police in the city of Cape Town. I'm sure the responding the responses to those allegations would paint quite a different story. And I've heard my own things on the side. But nonetheless, just concerning that cooperation between spheres of government, and I'm keen for General Julia, obviously, as the senior officer at the coalface of operational provincial operations, just to comment on what has been the partnership between SAPS in the Western Cape and the Metro Police in Cape Town. Is that optimal? I'm quite sure the answer is no, but we must give the General a fair chance to give his side of the story. Because when it comes to harmonizing the resources and the capabilities on both sides, there's great potential. I wonder, for example, if the implementation of the anti-gang strategy in the Western Cape is harnessing and leveraging the kind of data and insights that emerge from the ShotSpotter system. And if they're not, I highly doubt it's because the city is not willing to hand that over. So where we're not being optimal, what are the challenges? I've been made to understand that at one point there was very good cooperation between the SAPS and Metro Police, but then difficulties and frictions were encountered in terms of initiating joint operations owing to, let's say, skepticism from provincial SAP senior management about the continuation of that partnership. So there's lots of allegations flying around, and I have no interest in a blame game. We just need to find what the truth is, address it, so we can optimize the potential for those partnerships. So if General Julia would be so kind as to just clarify and shed some light on that picture. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Imam Sheikh and Honourable Mushlongu, good morning. Welcome to you. You're also welcome. Please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Allow me to start off by paying tribute to our police officers that died on the line of duty recently. Chair, I just want to draw to your attention that on a visit to Port Elizabeth, you'll be shocked at how traumatized the entire station in Port Elizabeth were at the death of their colleague. Right from the commander to every officer. It was, and I think this is going to have an impact on them lifelong. That's how it has affected them based on how cheap a life of a police officer is in South Africa today. Now, Chairperson, you know, I have repeatedly, you know, expressed concern, and I think it was for the first time it was this particular commissioner and this particular minister that had acknowledged and accepted that the problem is much, much bigger than the police. And what we are hearing today is very, very clear. If you don't have a holistic approach to the challenges that we face, there is no way, I can repeat, no way the police is going to be able to deal with the challenges that we face, particularly in terms of crime. One thing that has come out very, very clear, what are the three main contributing factors? It appears to be alcohol, drugs, firearms, and the socioeconomic conditions people are living in. Now, the question is, what are we going to do to be able to deal with those aspects that are creating these challenges that we are facing? And I'm glad, I think, COSATU and other civil society organizations are speaking about banning firearms. I think that would be the best thing we can do for our people in this country. Ban firearms once and for all, and I think it will help us a lot. The problem you got is that we know, particularly if you want to talk about the Western Cape, that the adverse effect it has because of alcohol in the Western Cape. But despite that, you find these taverns and shebeens propping up all over to such an extent that we now want to even sell them in the schools. So where are we going with it? I care, it's all it is doing is creating more and more problems for this, for the South African police services. And I don't know how you're going to actually deal with them. But I think what I'd like to hear from the minister, and I know there's supposed to be collaboration with the relevant departments, I must be honest, I'm not satisfied there's enough being doing. I'm not satisfied that the role players are coming to the party and dealing with the problem holistic and as seriously as it needs. Because these relevant departments, we speak about special planning. Yes, this is something we inherited. But 25 years later, let us not forget, in this 25 years, that special planning has been continuing. There are still people being housed in certain areas of the house, but no provision being made for them with better living conditions. So it's not going to get better unless we deal with these matters. And so, you know, I wouldn't like us to continuously say apartheid, because in the last 25 years we've done exactly the same thing in some of these areas, particularly in the Western Cape, where I have personally been seeing exactly what has been going on and what has been happening to the people in here. I'd like to know from the minister, you've heard concerns being expressed about the challenges victims are facing in the Western Cape, and I'd like you to tell us how you're going to basically deal with that under the capacity at these stations to be able to do it. Chairperson, let me tell you, some of our officers with vehicles, do you know they have to park at robots the entire day and night just to ensure nobody is going to break into a vehicle at the robot? So, you know, I don't believe that, you know, we seem to be dealing with this the way it is. I must also welcome the issue of child commissioners, because I think the problem that we are facing with the rape and sexual abuse and things like that, we need specific people with expertise and knowledge to deal with this. You have a magistrate dealing with a matter who knows very little about this, who's not even sympathetic to the needs of the victims, and yet they are dealing. But remember, the system is a problem. Because the very same person, the suspect, that raped that child, you and I must pay the tax to go and provide that very same person with legal aid. I'm not even going to the issue of the legal fraternity who put money before everything else. You understand? But look at the vicious cycle. You will give free legal aid for the very same person to be prevented. Then he goes to them, like I heard, 500 rand bail for a rape case. Can you believe it? There is really no coordination between the Department of Justice and the police. The police is doing everything to arrest. The Department of Justice is doing everything to remove it from its role. That is basically what I have found out, including those people that we can't house in the correctional services. Do you know how often I'm hearing that there is somebody who is on parole and he comes out and he's committing the same offense? And then it goes back to the police. So I think we need to look at this thing, you know, seriously. Now, we know that corruption is a serious problem and it exists in the private sector amongst the police. I want minister to tell us, you've got a vetting process, but remember, many people come clean. Even to politics, you come clean as an official and then politics make you corrupt. That's basically what it is. Exactly the same thing in the police force. You come as a good police officer with good intention and then you become corrupt. Added to that, the fact that you have fear. You have fear for the criminals because there are others that are colluding with it. Now, I want you to tell me, minister, what process can you follow? And I'm glad the unions are here because they must help you with this. What? Because otherwise you'll be falling for the labor laws. What process can you follow to ensure there's an ongoing, this lifestyle order don't work because I put it into my sister's account, in my grandmother's account, underneath the bed and everything else. Tell us what system can you use to have ongoing vetting and following these things to ensure that the correct things are. There's a reason why the community is not giving us the support that they used to give us once upon a time, but let us not forget. Every drug dealer is somebody's son, somebody's brother, somebody's boyfriend, somebody's husband. What are we doing about it? Why are we not working together? There must be a reason. Maybe we need to address that. I know we don't have much time, Chairperson. The other problem is, I'd like you to tell me, Minister, what percentage of these arrests that you got lead to convictions? One. And number two, what percentage of these criminals or suspects that are being arrested are of foreign nationals? I'd like you to tell us, because all these things are causing havoc in South Africa, because we can't deal with the challenges we face alone, but we have to have 5 million and 6 million and 10 million of foreigners in the country, and it's creating a problem. I think, Chair, for now, let me rather just stop there and give... Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Mshlongu, you want to come in? You're welcome.
You'll pardon me, Chairperson. I had to violate doctor's orders because you are dealing with a very special matter which is very close to my heart. Well, there is one thing, Chairperson, that I believe in. In every activity, there are push and pull factors that first need to be identified, analyzed, before any action can be taken. I think when I read the presentation whilst I was in the hospital yesterday, from the police side, I realized that it's a reaction to an escalating problem which men and women deployed on the ground cannot be able to defeat no matter how we reinforce them, as long as we leave this question that I'm going to ask. And I'm happy that National Commissioners, some of your divisional commissioners are here. I've asked this question last year. Why you, Chairperson, in all our meetings, you emphasize police pocketbooks must be used effectively in order to ensure that there is proof of evidence of what they are doing on a daily basis. In Durban, we have got Colonel Duma citing a very important matter of a brigadier that I'm going to name by name, Brigadier Gopal, who is supposed to be protecting our harbors, allowing drugs to flow from Durban and illicit goods to flow from Durban, caught as far as even Pretoria, costing millions of rands, illegally being in the country, having gained entry from Durban. You are told by senior management of police that that officer is investigated. What kind of an investigation to a police officer is done when a man is still sitting in the position of command, threatening same junior forces who are giving information to us as public representatives about illegality conducted by that policeman who is making millions if not billions of money, and some divisional commissioners sleeping in Mauritius through illicit money sourced by that officer. Hence, that officer is just a god, untouchable. What do we expect ground forces from the SAPS will do to defeat this nonsense? You've got a case of container full of mandrakes caught in Walvis Bay. South Africa under SACU is said to be a leading South African under South African Southern African Custom Union. You have got our country being blacklisted by that officer because of that container of drugs allowed entry into Namibia, but no action. Where are we heading to? That's why I didn't join your tour to Eastern Cape, because I was clear. What is it that we are doing here? Are we firefighting here? What is it? Now, lastly, Chairperson, civil society members touched on something very serious of abuse of women. We have got our own captain, Captain Mieni, who called me whilst I was in airport yesterday, calling me from Zambia in a high refugee camp there, fearing for his life, because there are some police who want to kill him from Durban. General Ngabela's report is very clear of how some senior officers from Kwamashu colluded with criminals who abused women under his command. When the officer, Captain Mieni, defended that woman, had to be subjected to a point of even leaving his country. His number is here. I said I'm going to pass it to you. He is now a refugee there. He has done nothing wrong. He is a victim of trying to defend his country. But allowing Colonel Siwela and his team to become hitmen within the South African police. General Ngabela's report talks to this. And we expect people to respect. Why are we rewarding criminals instead of just chasing them and putting them behind bars and pulling them off of their lunga, of their responsibilities of command and stars, because they don't deserve to be in that uniform, because they are a danger to their own colleagues. Now, that is why I defied the doctor's orders, to say, as a former soldier myself, I think General Ndosi knows, as a man who was in trenches with some of us. I fought for this country. I cannot allow nonsense and rubbish to be just covered where we are going to be bullied with all these papers that cannot work at the end. Because we must first clean the house in order to ensure that units that we put are purified and are actually able to enter into a clean combat, which will actually bear results. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I'm going to ask just two quick questions because we've got limited time for SAPS and the Minister to respond, and we still need to deal with item two. Maybe just the issue of command and control. It's been raised indirectly and directly by members, civil society and so on. At the national level, in terms of, I mean, we raised it with previous acting commissioners. I mean, the question is essentially is, who is SAPS gang tsar? Now, if we don't got that, I mean, is it detectives? Of course, level 3 to 5, you've got DBCI also involved. But at the national level, who is responsible for the anti-gang strategy and then cascading down to the provinces? Who is the primary actor? Is that the provincial commissioner? Yes or no? Because that will answer a lot of the issues that is dwindling here. The second issue is just, General Sithole, in terms of the linkages with the broader developmental issues. At Foresight level, DG level, what efforts is there? Of course, SAPS is in the peace and stability cluster. We presume there is regular meetings with justice and so on. If we can just get a high-level feedback on that, but then with the socio-economic cluster and the provincial governments, is there currently a dedicated mechanism to address those issues raised by the civil society here today? Or is it just meetings now and then, workshops, but is there a dedicated outro plan that might filter into the annual performance plan to ensure that the socio-economic issues, that's not really the police's duty, that they also factored in going forward? That's the questions. Thank you very much, honourable members. Let's go to Minister Trele and General Sithole and the team.
Thank you, Chairperson. It would have been nice to get another day for responses. So much has been said. I want to thank the Honourable Member Man, who is the only one who spoke about the fallen members of the South African Police, who really face hardcore criminals out there. For the last 7 weekends, I bury police. So thanks for realizing and recognizing that good police themselves are human beings and they have rights. Having including the last week where I buried two, the colonel in the crime intelligence and the warrant officer in the special task force. I always invite Pop Crew and Sapo to be part of those funerals. I still do extend that invitation. So much has been said. I want to start with a small correction and small admission. If the report is not there, that's my responsibility. I need to look at it with the police and is it Professor de Klerk? Is he a professor or doctor? Yeah. So who was given a responsibility of rounding up as a facilitator, I'll have to look at that. But to say that the workshop was called Hustley is not very correct. It took me to go to Hanover Park and one of the stations, I forget, where I interestingly sat down and listened to the names of the gangsters. Your hard living, your chunky, funky kids, your American, Boston, terrible shooters, your mongrels. And I said, this sounds funny to me. And sometimes I was falling in love with the names of these gangsters. And I said, if I do, what about young people? So I invited a broader sitting down and listen better in terms of understanding. And it took 3 weeks to arrange that meeting. From that meeting to the meeting in Michelle's Plain, it took 3 weeks. If it came late to you, had luck, but it took 3 weeks. I don't think 3 weeks can be hush-hush in preparing for the meeting. Having said that, I'll go back to the question of the report, and then we go back, because too many good things were said in that. In that, I've been preliminary briefed on the matter. Having said that, I'm one of the civil ministers that gives his number on the public. I go to public. When I go with the commissioners, they all know that police mobile numbers are shouted on the platform, as I do with my. Even if you go to your internet, you'll find it there, my number. If you go to the program like police, the duty calls, you'll find it there. It's there. So I'm trying to say to people, don't have a problem with not having access to me. Sometimes they come with the silly access. They phone at 10 past 2 in the morning to find out if the number is real. Said, but you should have phoned at 10 past 2 in the afternoon rather than morning to find if the number is real. So I will take the challenge. I don't think I've received any invitation from your meetings. I'll take the challenge that let that meeting be arranged of United Front and be all seated there. And I'll take the challenge now. If you don't organize it, I'll organize it. But that meeting will take place. One point I want to make, the Commission for Children, I will urge that if that comes up, it should be Commission for Women and Children rather than Children, because their victimization is very much interlinked between women and children. If we look at that, we should look at that broader spectrum of women and children. As I've said, really to answer everything, I'm sure operational they will answer. Look, the thing that Honorable Mbed is hampering are not very correct. Are really not very correct. I think you did say that one thing that we need to take out of this is politics, especially where the people are really dying. The Western Cape, I think since I was given this temporary job to Prime Minister Itohos, by the time you leave here, you might read the new names. So while you are there, to the left. I've spent most time in Western Cape. I spend most resources in Western Cape, both human, finances, and equipment. Not because of what, because of the cries and the prevalence of the death in Western Cape. Western Cape, when it comes to the murders, forever leads nationals. Your Nyanga, your Philippi, but all over leads. So if you really, while crime, Gauteng leads, but murders, Western Cape leads. So if you deal with crime but you don't work on murders, it's not much work you're doing. That's where we need to start. You move quicker, so the situation and the structure will be parallel. While you are equipping yourself with firefighters, water cans and all that, and the house is burning, we are not going to say, look, I'll equip and make sure that the fire systems are fully there when the house is burning. You will move on the house when you do the other. That's what we did with Western Cape. Hence, we put what was called Operation Thunder in Western Cape. We put almost 170 police that we stole from other provinces. Eastern Cape still hate me for that. Whenever I complain to the upper ground, they say, remember what you did to us last Christmas. So we put that, but we took other people, we push up the level of them dealing with some form of murder and some form of gangsterism. But it continued to say that is a broader kind of policing in Western Cape. One trend that is growing, I think Member Ramakhakane just alluded on it, and I think one trend that is growing, policing is going to be specialized in all areas, rather than having a visible, normal, flat policing. Maybe the criminals have finally started the normal, visible, ordinary policing. Hence, in most provinces, we push extra. We push extra personnel with extra training. You are correct. The capabilities are there with the South African police. What we have done in Western Cape, we have pulled them together to produce anti-gang units. We have pulled together visible policing, medium and risk, and high risk. That will be your TROT, that they call them a barrett in Ekasi, Lokshin. And we'll pull your NIU there. We'll pull your investigation best to this unit. We'll pull your tracking team. There is a team that lives there to deal with detectives, to deal with CI, to say, who do we want today? So it has been pulled here. It's intelligence gathering and analysis has been pulled here. The operation room will be more of the province, Mamkola, for now, because there are three provinces, so they work as such for now. And then we'll pull the admin, we'll pull the data capturing to produce anti-gang unit. It's a unit that has been given a lot of capabilities. But we simply say, even so, we still have to add training on that. Going forward, this is a starter pack, but we'll have to produce, as the OD grows, to produce more people working on this. By the way, we'll work on them, we'll try to vet them and all that, and we'll try to be harsh whoever gets out of the way. Especially, I must say, this unit has brought some sense of not necessarily trust, of relaxation with the communities. I've moved back to these communities. I've been in Hanover Park. I've been in Bodeville not once. They would fight me and all, but I would still go there. I've been in HSEC. You know, I know Western Cape now. Getting the actual feedback, not the politician feedback, the actual feedback, where I went to HSEC and next to the police base camps, there are, I think, five base camps that we're supposed to put 3 months. We've put them 7 months. Those base camps, where you go to the communities and say, you dare take this base camp away from here. I said, like, it's 3 months, but don't care, go away. This one is permanently there. ASEC, for the first time, they said, our kids can be sent to shops after six. That's the community meeting saying so. Not a report. They say, our kids, and we saw them playing in the park. They say, you see that park? There was no child playing there. Thanks for that. So these are the things we're trying to push as we revamp the old, because it cannot be Western Cape alone. It's a national structure. But in Western Cape, there was fire burning. So we had to really come to this fire. I'm sure the figures will tell that there is a lot of problem. People are still dying here. There is a shooting and all that. But there is and that's why I call it a preliminary impact, because we would like to see that impact growing. Especially the young kids that, by the way, I visit them in hospital, these kids. I visit them in hospital. When they get injured, that little, I forget, very beautiful 6-year-old that one visited in hospital. She's back in home. I send her the bower flowers and all that. So these young kids, they become victims. The father blames himself to say, I sent a shop after hours and she was shot on the road. We raise the issue of environmental design. Kids in Cape Flats play on the streets. Are they supposed to play there? The answer is simply no. They're supposed to play to the identified kids' place, parks and all that, but they play on the streets.
they all shot and killed on the street. So that's why we're making this call of environmental design. Shipping is one major problem, and I've been requesting that the legal department, including this advisor, they must come with a law that is overarching, because it's a provincial competence. I'm a sheep. And I'm telling you, we have trouble in that thing. You find them dancing at 4 in the morning. You raid it, they show you the license. That the license here says it closes at 4. And provinces and the liquor boards, they give these things a meter from the gate of the schools, a meter from the church, and the law is very clear. That's why I want an overarching kind of law. So we have been making the shout to provinces. Provinces, they see economic opportunities, we see crime, because there is a lot of crime around the shippings. Most women abuse around the shippings. Most murders are around the shippings. But even general nonsense around the shipping. In my phone, I have a message this morning. This guy says, from 7 to 7, you can't sleep. And I say, what's the story? He said, no, the license next to me, I think it's a certain Santuario Street, somewhere in Nigeria as I speak. He said, no, they have a license that they say they close at 7 in the morning of shipping. So we want, when we say we work together, provinces and local governments, that's what we mean. Things that we put through. You see, I just want to make this call. I end now. I said yes to answer this. I want to make a call to say, when we make the call for politics on this, we must understand that we're making the call on top of the graves that you bury over the weekend. Simple things that you should all come. You know, seaside, Kailisha, the shot, side sea, the police was shot and killed. The police was shot and killed, and I went there. We were under the camera that is 360 degrees, but it's 8 years not working. And this, you find this not working only in Kailisha and Nyanga. All other camps, they are working. So people should be dealing with those things sometimes. You see, Commissioner and I, we had this thing we call self-inspection. When the court said, yeah, there are no resources in Western Cape, but went on to say on the African or black areas. That's the court decision. Court didn't say that there are no enough resources in Western Cape. It said in the black areas. But we don't talk about those things. That's what the court. So initially we wanted to appeal that, but we said that we agree with that because the resources, the shortage is in the black areas. But the narrative is that there are shortages in the Western Cape. It's not true. The shortage is on the black areas in Western Cape. And we must deal with that and agree on it, so that we sit down and correct those things. Hence, we have tried to pump even more and more resources in the Western Cape. Last one, I will also make the, I know sometimes you fight me when you see me. The last point of the meeting was really almost a hell for me. They say, hey, well, what to? But you still go there, you still sit down. The community involvement in crime is a 50% solution. I don't care even half of the South African population can be police. If the other 50% is not involved in this community, there shall be no resolution of crime. So it's not even something that we need to be really reminded of. It's automatic. So These invitations of sitting in all other structures, including the revival of the structures like CPFs and all that, which, by the way, is a big portion of provincial responsibility, the CPFs. It's a big portion of it. CPFs, Community Policing Forum, is big. So we work together on those. So I invite myself in the meetings where I'm not invited. But also, we have put some matters of bringing the communities. There is one thing suggested here, Kosatu. I can't see Abu Henriette. I don't know how they missed it today. I don't know. I expected that Henriette would be the first one here. I can't see them. They've suggested, of which we're working, yes, as taken into account, of the Workers' Summit, working against crime. How the structure is done, I don't know. But I have sent my staff to work on it, to say workers are making a call to work on the crime summit. What I loved about that call was that it was signed by all communities in the Cape Flats. It was not the colored townships, it was not the African. It was all communities for the first time, and that they presented one memorandum on that matter of workers' summit coming together. How the component is, but I could see the signatures representing Nyanga, representing Kailisha, representing and all that. So that opportunity needs to be grabbed where all communities come together. Because there is this tendency to think that gangsterism is called some race issue, which needs to be really fought, and we fight with the understanding that is a human issue. It might be, I'm told that the history of gangsterism is more than 200 years in Cape Flats. More than 200 years. That very wrote a book on it, but he wrote it in Afrikaans. I've been asking him to interpret the book. So he knows better about the gangsterism and all that. So those are the things that we need to go for and all that. So structures need to be done. I want to end with this point. And I want to hear from you and everybody here. I want to Bonneville to see a young, beautiful lady, 6 years old. I saw the parents. I went to hospital. As I got out of on the street, there was a queue of mothers that says, I've lost the son. I've lost the husband. Yeah. I've lost the son. I've lost him. Not a single one who said to me, I've lost a gangster. Not a single one. So that's why I want to take a proper cue here. That told me that there is no mother that gives birth to a gangster. Not a single one. Mothers give birth to sons, and sons, for whatever reason, they tend to be what they are. Now, there's been a discussion. Who comes, I said to these mothers, will call the mothers that have lost sons. But there are voices that say, you can't call the mothers of gangsters. There are voices that say. I say, show me the mother that has given birth to the gangster. So I heard you talking about the mothers that have lost husbands and sons. I would love to say, let's call the mothers. Because all the mothers have lost the sons, and they talk with those mothers. And if from this level you say we call the mothers that have lost those that are not gangsters, which means we're not resolving the problem. We simply say, get enhanced, keep on being gangsters, we don't care about you, they're not the issue of the government. So those are the things that with the civil society I would like to discuss. So that you don't do things and you are blamed that you're doing things wrong and all that. I had called the thing in 3 weeks, but because of this input, I've taken a step back to try to speak with everybody. Are we dealing with the mothers to give birth to sons without them being gangsters? Or do we have mothers that give birth to gangsters? So that's
that's the question I would like to be answered and be given a proper mandate going on that particular one. Linked to that, Chair, I went to the last three murder scenes and was taken to pieces for going next to the house of the alleged gangster that was killed. I was taken to pieces on these things, social media. I was taken to pieces. And then, just there, one aunt said, this was a good man, saying the alleged gangster. This was a good man. I say, why is a good man? I said, you see, my son has bought him techies, has brought shoes and all that, and he told me that these gangsters are better organized than us in consuming communities. We fight among ourselves and all, and we don't work on those things. Indeed, if a pair of Nike, that boy will love that man. A pair of Nike, the food and all that kind of thing. So I said to myself, this boy is 11 and refuses to go to school. Say why? Say, but saying to this man, he gives me food, so I'm fine. And who happened to be alleged to be a gangster. So this civil organization we have much bigger job to do rather than spending time fighting ourselves. I put this police, maybe Jula will answer why it does not respond to the question, but I put this management and myself to be open to the meetings of communities where they call us to try and pull things together. The very last point, education, even here in Western Cape, has become a big hot potato. I went again to another school in Bolivar. I had a meeting there. There were more kids in the meeting than parents at 11 o'clock on Tuesday. There were more kids between 10 and 15. And I asked, and those kids are the pool of recruitment by the gangsters. I asked the parents there, why are they not at school? One mother came out and said, why should I go to school? They must stay with us at home. It's nice home. The mother, I said, but mother, you can't do it. But no, there are no teachers at school. They go and loiter and all those kinds of things. I went to the one young one. I think I'll be able to take care. I said, don't you want to be a pilot? She says, yeah, it would be nice to be a pilot, but why don't you go to school? She said, no, I'm finished. What grade? Grade 10. But you finish at grade 12. Dad, grade 10 is enough. So I said, you go back to school. I promise to take her back to school, both physical and otherwise, financial and all that, because she looks too innocent to be loitering, and she idolizing the gangster. Those are the things together we must do. As we fight, we must fight for conventions. We have a bigger war. Especially here, there shall be no generation at a certain given point. Even if we win and we lose politically, we'll be leading the failed generation. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. General, we're sitting with a real-time problem. So I think maybe in 5 minutes, real high level and the other responses we can have in writing. Is that fine, members? Because we must deal just with the second item as well. General?
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Maybe, Chair, briefly, first I would like to acknowledge and appreciate the input and submissions by civil society. The cases which has been cited, and all those number of cases, the two generals, they are going to deal with them. I'll just ask the members who were raising them just to speak to them so that we give them attention. Further to that, Chair, I think the Honorable Minister has given the responses. What I can say is just to confirm that we have, after getting the task teams in place in the other provinces, we have commissioned the work study to get a formal structure for all the other provinces. But I needed also, at the same time, to hear the response from Honorable Ramatlakane, Western Cape is concluded. It's not part of the task teams. So I think we're moving from that particular point. Then the one other call I wanted to make, Chair, is that as I listen to civil society submissions, everyone is prepared to work together with the police, government departments, and I think from the Secretariat, the Anti-Crime Summit was convened. And we then need a national crime prevention framework, which we are busy with, and that create platform for government agencies, civil society, and as well as security forces. I think the sooner we work on it and then we come together, I think the better, because we also need these inputs that they are putting forward. And maybe also, Chair, finally, I think the community policing strategy has been pronounced by the President. And he also made an appeal to the nation to work together with the South African Police Service in order to optimize the community policing strategy. And through that strategy, we are coming closer to the communities, and we're asking the communities to close the gap. Let us then work together and make use of that strategy. Maybe it could have taken longer, but we needed a strategy so that we work within a strategic framework. But I think now we're going to be doing it. And that strategy extends to mobilize quite a broader civil society and as well as government agencies. Then, Chair, we are also linking this process to the criminal justice cluster. And at the level of the criminal justice cluster, we're not only looking at subs. We're looking at the broader cluster, including the resourcing. If there's problems that relate to investigation, we're also equally looking at the problems of prosecution. We're also looking equally looking at the problems of justice so that we render a service collectively to the public. So if we get that particular support, I think this is what we're going to do. The rest of the responses, Chair, we will provide them in writing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner and Minister and the team for the responses. We will, of course, study it and deal with it when the third and second quarterly is being discussed. Thank you very much. Honourable Members, just item two, as I've indicated in the beginning, we received on Friday the referral from the Speaker on Wednesday. It's with relation to a letter from the Honourable Minister of Police regarding to the extension or not of Mr. McBride's appointment as head of IPED. The purpose is just to table it officially in the meeting now for members' perusal. And then just in terms of the process, depending on what the court order was this morning in Pretoria, if the date is 28th February, that means we will have to process it quite in line with the timeline set out by the court. So that means that we will have to change our program for next week. So we'll communicate that in due course. There's also the possibility that we will have to meet on Thursday to adopt the program and timelines. But I just want to warn members, the option would be early morning or after the response by the President and the NA. So we'll discuss that with them. So I'm better.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a very brief input from my side and a suggestion is that because we are awaiting the court's order today, and having looked at the time when the issue came up a few weeks ago, at the legislation, which unfortunately is not clear or explicit around procedural provisions for the renewal of the IPED director, I think it may be useful, should there be grounds for it, to also request perhaps a briefing from the Minister in terms of the committee's oversight role for a sort of comprehensive and cogent explanation of the reasoning behind the proposal of non-renewal, because if nothing else, this is a matter of rationality in accepting public office. So I think that will be useful.
Remember, I've indicated that if we meet on Thursday, there will be actually two items on the agenda. That will be the process
the process and the, furthermore the timeline. So your subject will be covered by that. So we'll deal with that then. Thank you very much. Honourable members, we come to the end of the meeting. Thank you very much. Oh, no, it's